Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
What is up, everybody? This is Garnet Lee, and it is Weekend Confirmed time. Have an awesome show ready to hit you right in the eardrums with a vacancy to my left because he's off at an audition. So everybody, right now, if he hasn't already heard back, think very, very strong positive thoughts for Jeff Cannata.
Mental
because
thoughts.
Mental thoughts.
Yes.
I want to feel the extrasensory perception waves beaming through the intersphere and into our electronified listening devices.
That was kind of metaphysical.
Yeah, something like that. But Jeff,
good.
Jeff Mattis is here.
I am, in fact, here.
And we have a first timer.
Yeah, we do.
It's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it is.
A little nervous.
No, you're not. I don't even believe it.
I know.
I mean, you sweat like that all the time. I've seen.
Oh, they can't, though.
From G4 and previously the game show, that would be Nerd Pokerian.
That's me.
Nicole Z.
Hey.
Hey.
So, we got lots of stuff to talk about. We got games to talk about. We got news to talk about. And we have the Jeff Cannata watch. So.
Yeah, he may appear.
He may.
He may. He may not. He may.
He may.
He probably will.
He probably
will.
Yeah,
I mean, let's not.
And the good thing is we have no idea what he will bring to the table. So partway into the show, things will change.
The plan will be derailed.
Hey, I want to take a moment to ask you guys and gals out there who are listening to come step up your game a little bit in the Shack News threads, because we got some awesome posters who are posting all the time. And there's a lot of discussion. That's easy for me to say.
Yeah, conversation.
There's a lot of discussion going on between people. But dude, if you came on here, it'd be even better. I'm sure.
Yeah, the more the merrier, as they say.
I like that nasal surfer dude voice you just did.
Yeah.
It was good. You should stick with it.
And,
I think he's gonna.
And say bra every third word.
Hey, bra.
Much better. That's the Venice Beach style.
I have all kinds of voices, but I don't use them here. I save them for bed.
That's the best place.
Yeah. Chicks dig it. Next time you're in bed with your significant other, bust out a voice.
Yeah, impersonate Marcus Phoenix. You know, they love that.
Hey, babe.
Fight through the pain. Oh, that's kind of... That's what he said. Okay, well, that's weird now.
Yeah.
I just did that.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, maybe not.
What are other... I mean, I'm not even going to try and save myself. What else, guys? How are things?
Tuck and roll!
Yeah. That's good, too.
Garnett is on a tuck and roll.
Seriously,
anything Dizzy says would be mildly offensive.
Or awesome.
Yeah. Well, he talks about Betty's titties are his tank's lights.
See?
So anything really.
You just kind of, be sensible. Tailor this to your mate, obviously.
Sure.
Right.
You know, think ahead.
Take requests. That's helpful. And
yeah. Listen, yeah. Kind of try to get feedback. And
yeah, play. This is a whole new realm of play. So just, embrace it, enjoy it, have a good time with it,
Just be yourself.
The other option is just...
being somebody else.
It's just to ignore everything we just said. That's the other option.
No, don't eat.
That's the better of the options.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
Okay. You should go to the Shack News forums and let us know how talking to your significant other in bed with Marcus voices worked out for you.
That is an excellent idea, actually.
Let us know. Maybe Gladys voice.
Someone's gonna be like, "Oh, I tried Master Chief."
Did you nod a lot? I mean,
Master Chief sounds like a position.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do the Master Chief, yo.
There is another untapped element of this whole discussion, but we'll save that for the video show.
All right.
Yeah. So there
it'll
you go.
It'll be graphs.
There will be a pie chart. So 37% of you. Anyway, moving on into the real world, because I know you guys love it when we digress into stupid tomfoolery.
It's so awesome.
It is actually kind of. I could just kind of do awesome. The whole show just kind of.
Just do
off
a riff show and not actually have a subject.
Let's just not even talk about games today.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about riffs, actual guitar riffs.
That was very Wayne's World of you.
Yeah.
That was the whole idea.
Nice.
Of course. Dude, like,
that was like the best thing I ever heard, Wayne.
Seriously. It was even better when Aerosmith was on there. That was kind of ridiculous.
They were a recurring guest.
They were kind of ridiculous. That was kind of awesome. I would think we need a bona fide star to bust into the Weekend Confirmed studio and just blow it up like that.
Maybe
and then
really
just like drop the mic.
Or...
And I don't mean like Steve Harvey or something. I mean like, you know, next level.
So give me a, who are you thinking? Give me a ballpark hit. You know. You want like Bruce Willis up in here or what?
No, Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell would be
Bruce
awesome.
Bruce Campbell would be the shit because he does voices.
He does, but mostly he does that, you know, that cheesy Bruce Campbell voice.
Yeah. Did you ever play the game back on the Xbox where he played the bounty hunter in space? Super underrated game. It was very good. I think it was called Mace the Bounty Hunter.
Oh,
it was really, really fucking good game.
Can't say I've ever heard of that.
It was really good. It was a really good Xbox game that no one paid attention to that Bruce Campbell did the voice for.
He was the main dude?
Yeah, of course.
That's enough to make me go back and want to play that.
Space Marine number 6. He had a great role.
Space Marine 6 was actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, so, I know. It was Bruce Campbell.
True. And what was the game like? I mean, I guess you were bounty hunting.
Yeah,
in
space.
You were bounty hunting in space.
So that's where all the good bounties
are. A combination of adventure and space combat. And it was really well put together. And
jetpacks? Can you confirm jetpacks?
Hold on. Well, actually, while we are moving forward, I will pull up the page, probably off Wikipedia or something, on my iPad, and I'll give you like the information on what you can do, like where you get it. I wonder if it's on Game
Command. The surfer's back.
Yeah. See, I called it. It's going to be a voice episode.
Yeah. Good news, everyone. We're doing a voice episode.
I don't have voices. No. This is super awkward.
Hey, we were actually, before this, as we're digressing about all kinds of stuff,
I know.
We were talking about like weird swag. You said you have like Klepek, first of all, who doesn't even listen to the show because he's a giant bomb and he's way cooler than us now or something.
Well, yeah.
He's obviously super cool. He's off getting married. Congratulations, by the way,
yes,
Patrick and
absolutely.
Katie.
Yeah, that's nice.
Super congratulations to you guys. Two of my most favorite people in the world getting married, which is awesome. But he left Nicole... his inflatable moose head.
Yeah, so when he was a games editor at G4 for a while, and when he left, I inherited a giant moose head, and it has to be like 3 feet long and maybe 2 feet tall, and it's a moose head, and we all assume it came from like some Cabela's Big Game Hunter type of game. It's a safe assumption. And it's mine, and it sits on top of my desk, and whenever people walk by, they just kind of stare, and they're like, wow. This must be G4.
Swag is so bizarre. So today's swag haul was interesting. And you may have seen other folks on the net
took
pictures of them. First of all, there was the Darksiders 2 Tombstone.
Which I didn't get, and I'm not bitter or anything. But
was it actual size?
No, you didn't see that on my desk?
Foot big,
no.
12 inches.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Boy, if that is 12 inches, you've been dating a lot of those kind of guys.
That's what it looked like in the picture. I didn't actually get one. Again, I'm not upset about it.
Someone must have gotten one at G4.
I think Blaine got one, and I'm sure my boss got one, but he wasn't here today. So.
It was kind of bizarre because, like, a couple of months ago, their PR people reached out, and they're like, yeah, we need your date of birth. And I'm like... No,
yeah, I lie about my age,
no, actually, you don't need my date of birth.
Yeah,
no, I'm pretty sure you don't.
Need is the wrong verb here. Yeah.
And so they asked me, and I told them my date of birth, but I didn't ever give them the year because I'd be like, well, I don't know, like, whatever. Here's my date of birth. You guys, I don't care. It's September 5th, whatever. And so I get the thing today, and like some people's I've seen on the internet, like, had the full date. Mine just says like 9/5 to today's date. Like,
didn't even try.
Like, I was like, wait, you guys didn't get that. So yeah, Mace Griffin Bounty Hunter. Here you go. Mace Griffin. Mace. Hold on. Mace Griffin, Bounty Hunter.
Moose Griffin?
Moose Griffin,
moose,
yes.
The moose.
Oh,
that's where the moose head came
from. That makes sense now.
And now it all makes sense, yeah.
But better than that was the cologne in time for cologne.
So who sent you that?
THQ.
Ah, man.
Because nothing says... Hold on. What game might you think that would be for?
It's from THQ?
I blew that part already, but what game do you think that might be for? Clone in time for Cologne.
Saints Row.
No.
Maybe, is it Company of Heroes?
Of course! Who doesn't think World War II real-time
strategy? I would never
game
think that. I just know that Company of Heroes is going to be at Gamescom. I'm a cheater.
Yeah, so there you go.
The scent is trench stench or something.
Cologne.
What is the what's yes, the fragrance?
That's World War One.
Like what kind of World War II cologne are you slapping
it's
on?
It's nice to have though because conventions never smell good. So this is giving everyone like a fighting chance.
Everybody will smell equally bad.
Well, I guess that's BO's better than like you know.
So anyway, I don't see any information here on Mace Griffin Bounty Hunter being
Little loved game.
Being on Xbox Live in Originals or whatever it is. You know,
who published it? Where should people send their angry emails to? Demanding the game is downloadable.
Warthog Games. You remember them, right?
No.
Yeah. I do remember Warthog. But
really?
Yeah. But but the thing that you made me think of.
You can check it out.
What?
I'm handing.
Oh yeah.
So now you remember when you see the cover. So the thing that was cool about it was that it had both the flight sim part and then the first person shooter part. It was a surprisingly good game, completely overlooked.
Yeah, I just never
published
played it.
Published by Vivendi. There's a chance for this.
Uh huh.
It could live again.
Oh man, we keep talking about this. Somebody's going to do a Kickstarter, and it's going to be.
It'll be like Rise of the Triad coming back. Did you see that from QuakeCon?
Yeah, that looks pretty cool, actually.
So QuakeCon was over the weekend down in Dallas, and one of the major announcements, which is a bizarre major announcement, is Rise of the Triad coming back as an Unreal 3 engine game. Did you see the trailer for it, Nicole?
I did not see the trailer before it, but it's like what $14.99, and it's going to have like upgraded graphics and.
Yeah, it looks. I mean, it looks good. It looks like a Duke Nukem game, basically.
All right, so. Which of you fools ever played Rise of the Triad?
I played a bit of it.
Oh, you actually did?
Yeah.
All right. Nicole's like, I wasn't even born then.
I might not have been.
No, it's like the classic old. Actually, it was funny. When I first saw it, I was like, man, I can't believe they're remaking Shadow Warrior. And I was like, oh, no. Because I was getting those confused, like all those old
You know. So this is way before Shadow Warrior.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I know.
So keep in mind, Rise of the Triad.
I just saw Triad in it, and I was like, oh, immediately made that.
Rise of the Triad was the evolution of what was going to be Wolfenstein 3D 2. So right. You're talking all the way back on the build engine,
right?
You know, and actually, even funnier is the Rise of the Triad team was the team that then got completely drug into the muck trying to develop Prey. So that's like Tom Hall and all those guys down there at 3D Realms, and they were obviously like very ambitious because what they were doing at the time with Rise of the Triad, all of that engine to ramp it up to make that game alone was pretty awesome. But then they got really drawn into Prey, and we all know what happened with that.
That said, it is a really weird game for them to, you know, I mean it's cool.
Well,
so
the thing about Rise of the Triad is that it has a really, really strong cult following, right?
Yeah.
It's one of those games that those people who are in love with it really love it and point back to, and most everybody else looks at it and goes, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like I hadn't heard of it before QuakeCon. Like, people probably have never mentioned it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's easily said. So here's a question for you. What do you think about Jeff, did you see the video?
Yes.
Okay, so my takeaway from the video was that it is definitely Unreal Engine 3, and at the same time, I'm sort of struggling with the question of whether I like this treatment that they're giving it or not. And to me, it really reads like they're very much trying to stay in the spirit of the original. So one of the things they're going to offer is you can play the game with the sounds from the original 1995?
Yeah,
something like that.
Okay, so I was born.
Like from the original.
Definitely born.
I don't know. You're like 16, right?
Nope.
Oh. Anyway, so you could play with like the original sounds, and then I'm watching this thing, and it's in Unreal Engine 3, and so it's high def and you know, has the higher resolution look to it. And then there's like some of those textures that come on, and I'm like, that looks like a texture out of Quake. Which is not really all the way back to that era, but it certainly harkens back to another era. And then it has that really weird, like, super stiff arm inclusion of the gun in the frame. And I don't know, I'm sort of torn. So my thought is, like, I don't know whether I really like this sort of weird paying homage back to the original but updating it to modern. But I do think that it's a more successful tact than what wound up happening to Duke.
True, although that
probably a cheaper route too.
And I think
it's definitely it's cheaper and achievable.
Yeah.
Well, and it'll probably be better as well because it is people know exactly what game they're getting, Right.
Yeah.
But what about people like me who don't have any idea what they're getting? Like, how would you pitch this game?
Well, it's old school bombastic shooter. You know, I mean, I don't know.
Imagine putting on your headphones and putting in Motorhead and turning it up to like 11 and playing any other shooter you played in the last 2 years cranked up to like 2.5 times speed.
I'm imagining this.
It's really, really fast. Yeah. And it's when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, this. It reminded me actually of Duke Forever when I first saw media for that. And I was like, okay, but this is different because they're not. This is a game that's already exists. This is a game that they're, you know, reskinning ostensibly, making me be tweaking a little bit. But it's that game, so I'm not nearly as worried about Rise of the Triad returning.
I'm not worried about it. I'm just not sure exactly how I'm going to respond to it. It's like, you know, there's a lot of games competing for my time, and especially if it's coming out or they're planning to come out this fall or quote unquote by spring of 2013. There's a ton of games competing for my time in that window.
Right, maybe April 2013. Like maybe you'll have time.
Yeah. And another shooter that is, I think for Rise of the Triad fans, based off what I've been reading on Shaq, where a lot of, you know, obviously Shaq, dating back to its Dallas history, has a lot of hardcore fans there. There's certainly some people who are super interested in it. I'm just not sure past that who gets into it.
See, that's the kind of game that I would release, like, now.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
It's also going to be probably a downloadable title, so it's going to be something that you can probably play a lot quicker, and it's going to be cheaper, and it's going to be easier to get, and you don't need to go to the store or anything. So I think that it's not going to compete with AAA titles, so maybe it won't have to, like, not be out between November and January. But I heard that at QuakeCon, a lot of people were saying that they wanted co-op added to the game, and they said that they're not ready to announce anything, but that feature is definitely on the developers' minds. Now, I'm not familiar with the game, but would co-op add something to the experience for you two?
No.
It might be interesting, but like
I don't think so.
It's just going to be mad chaos. Like,
dude, the way...
Split screen, or would that even work?
No, probably not. It's so fast that...
Yes, exactly. There's something that's hard to replicate in the modern analog world of controls about when we used to play mouse and keyboard with the arrow keys, because you basically were just run and aim and shoot, run, because everything was just moving super fast.
Well, and you could whip like 360 degrees in like half a second, like less than half a second. Just,
and that's interesting. I think that that's a part of the argument that maybe fans of mouse and keyboard were trying to make for a long time that I wasn't completely catching, is that the move to sticks certainly changed some of that speed. And it's not just turning speed, it's overall pace of game.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's true. It's true. That in that arena specifically, in shooters, in old school shooters, most of them, I would say, that they try to update just don't end up feeling...
Yeah.
You know, you get that little nostalgia kick or whatever, and you're like, oh, cool, shinier. But
they're fixing it all for Doom 4.
Of course they
are. You saw that, right?
Well, you didn't see it, though.
What are they doing?
Why, you didn't see all that Doom 4 info?
No.
Well, all the leaked info? A few months ago, there was leaked info.
There was leaked info a few months ago. I was actually making fun of them Bethesda-ing it and going... And Carmack actually in his keynote saying...
Which I watched every minute of.
You watched all three?
Four hours, I think. I watched all of
it. You're insane. You are in. Why did you watch?
But I only understood like every other word he said, and like I just like made up drinking games in my head, even though I wasn't drinking. But I'm like, oh, this could be a drinking game.
Why were you not drinking?
Well, I was at work.
Oh,
why were you not drinking?
All right, fine.
I wasn't drinking. I'm winking.
Okay, every time he says vertex, take a shot.
Or latency, or then he'll go or he'll end a sentence and add there at the end. That was also one.
You know what's frustrating is the original rumor was that Doom 4 was going to be debuted at QuakeCon last year, and here we are a year later, and it's out, everyone knows they're working on it. There's no longer any suspense about it. It's fine. That's fine. There's no reason not to at least show a little bit of it and give some idea what you're...
Unless it is next-gen, though, because you can't... It's next-gen, man. It is next-gen. It has to be.
Dude, everything it does is next-gen. Super next
okay,
gen.
But like it's actually next gen, like whatever the next consoles are going to be, and you can't really talk about a game that's going to be on a console that doesn't exist yet.
Well, they could have talked about it on PC because in that same damn keynote, he was very apologetic about what happened with Rage on PC.
That was the first half hour.
Right.
Yeah. I was like, please don't flame me, but we really screwed that up.
But he admitted it, which was nice of him.
It was. Did you guys experience those texture problems
when they were
at their worst? Yeah. Well, so console wasn't too bad.
There was some popping, but like, you know, download it to your hard drive.
Yeah. No, I mean that piece when they first released the PC thing, and they did patch it fairly quickly, but like it was really bad. that like those.
So did you play All of Rage?
Yeah.
Did you play All of Rage?
I played Disc 2. I did not beat the ending. Someone told me what the ending was, and I was like, well...
Yeah, I mean...
Okay, that's not going to give me much closure. I guess I'll just... I figured I'd wait for... I'd wait for a DLC that would add an ending, and I'd wait to play a complete version, and then we never got anything.
How'd that work out for you?
Yeah, no, it didn't work out so well. Still waiting.
Yeah. That's
any day now.
It's like Silent Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, it's... did you hear about the Silent Hill 360 patch?
No, that was not what I was referencing. I was actually talking about Silent Hill at Universal City because I'm going there for Halloween. Are you going there? Are you going to go do that?
Oh, you know, I'm terrified of like everything.
So
perfect.
I do get free parking there.
Do you really?
Well,
yeah.
How do you do that?
There NBC Universal. What?
Really?
Yeah.
You should take us.
I guess you all fit in my car.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I don't know what I'm getting myself into right now. Hey, so how about that Silent Hill video game?
Pyramid Head. Come on.
Scary.
Pyramid Head. Scary. It's me. I don't like scary stuff either.
But
Ariel's totally told me I have to go.
Okay.
It's like she's a super Silent Hill junkie, so there's no choice around.
And did you guys see the trailer for the new
movie?
Yeah. No, you know what? Actually, I was supposed to watch
John
it the other
Snow's
day.
John Snow's in it.
I wound up watching.
It actually looks good.
No, it doesn't.
I think it looks good.
The dialogue was awful.
Well, okay, the dialogue was awful, but it was all like one-liner production.
It was like, what is this key? It is the key to all things. And I'm like, really? Things?
Things.
All the things?
All the things.
Wait, can you bring it over here? My key's in my car over here. I need the key to all things.
Look, they're trapped in another world, and they need the key to all things. Okay? All
right, you convinced me. I'm
in. Story. There is also a dark presence.
But I thought the trailer looked good.
Eddard Stark and Jon Snow are in it, so.
Yeah.
My vote.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Does it have Forces of the North?
No.
No.
Fail.
But that was the character that I rerolled in Skyrim this week, is I made an Eddard Stark.
Really?
Alike. Yeah.
Are you taking any steps to prevent beheading?
You should probably do that. That was handled by the intro.
Yeah. Well done. Well done, sir.
So, yeah.
Good job, lad. Good job. So, anyway, to get back to the intermediary sidetrack that we took there, Konami bailed out on patching Silent Hill for 360, despite the fact that they know that it's a problem, and they patched it on PS3, elected to not pony up the cash to do it for 360. Of course, the 2,500 of you who bought the game are really disappointed by that.
Is this just a matter of them not giving a fuck?
Yeah.
They said technical resources and like staff or something, or they didn't really give a reason that made sense.
I mean, technical limitations and resources.
Yeah.
Do we know how it sold?
We never know how things sold in particular, but I think it's safe to say that it didn't sell particularly well.
Right, but there's more than like 12 people out there going, man.
Solid 27 people.
Yeah.
Easy.
At least. Now, what do you do if you're an angry 360 fan? Like, do you just complain on Amazon and try to get your money back if that's where you bought it from?
So Klepek wrote an article about it, actually, and Konami's response was to steer people to their online customer support division for individual assistance.
That's always a good thing. I love customer support.
But how are they going to support a buggy game? There's nothing they can say to make the game not suck.
Nicole,
or not broken.
Have you tried unplugging your modem and resetting?
Have you tried turning it off and then on again?
Yes.
They just have a list of totally mundane suggestions, so you get so fed up and frustrated, you just slam the phone down halfway through.
You've been with this customer support agent before. I have talked to them too.
Yeah. That's
now,
that, yeah.
Jeff, have you pulled up the... I don't know. I couldn't think. I don't even not go with the scripts. I was going to think of what the next step in that script is. What is the next step in the script? They tell you to unplug your modem and plug it back in.
Wait 30 seconds.
And
say a little prayer to whoever.
They'll probably have you do a little hokey pokey with your router too.
Oh, yeah.
If you have one of those,
put your left router in. You put your left router out.
Yeah. Maybe it's an issue with the cable company. Maybe you should call their customer service.
I need a new router, by the way. You guys, like, how many wireless devices do you have hooked up to your at your home?
I only have one, and there's 5 people, and we have 1,000,007 wireless devices, and we end up restarting that router, like, every 30 seconds. It's ridiculous.
It's kind of a pain in the ass.
It's so... what do you do? Do you have a router upstairs and downstairs? Like, who can afford that?
See, I just get home, and I turn on everything. I turn on my PC, my Xbox, my PlayStation 3, my phone. I'm like, gotta... And
3G,
then I clog
no
up
thank
all the
you.
Ports.
Yeah. I'm tempted to drop a little coin and get one of the new 802.11ac routers, which is the next beyond N. Mm-hmm. And there's an Asus one that has a like wireless signal shaping foo in it. Mm-hmm. At least that's what they say.
I'm also proud of your correct pronunciation of Asus.
Yeah?
It's very well. I thought it was Asus for the longest time, and then you call their customer support, and they're like, "Thank you for calling Asus."
You're like,
Dr. "What? Did I read Mount Olympus?
I know, right?
Holy shit! He's gonna cast lightning bolt down at me." I'm sorry, your product is excellent.
Can I have some new firmware?
So yeah, and if anyone's listening is into routers, you have any recommendations, I would definitely be interested in hearing that, because the problem I have right now is that when more than a couple of three devices connect at the same time in our house, we get all kinds of signal loss. Really? And I think it's due to the age. I'm using an old Netgear
54 WRTG or whatever it is. The one you can put the DDRT on there or the tomato firmware.
Do you have anything hardwired to it?
Of course.
Okay, well, that...
The hardwires are fine.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, the hardwire right now goes to... So one of them goes to my Sonos because it's not... You know, Sonos has to have a wire.
Right.
And one of my wires goes to my computer because it has to have a wire. And the other port goes to my Xbox 360 because I play more multiplayer online on live than anything else.
Right. Well, and your PC is already hooked up, so...
Right.
There you go.
Right. And then Ariel's 360 has the other wire. But then we've got two PS3s, we've got two phones, an iPad.
Any laptops?
Two laptops, my television,
right,
which is internet connected. And so it just seems like if the iPad, if any combination of a couple of three devices is attached, is connected at the same time, there's a 50-50 shot that it's going to puke.
Right. But and granted, this is not the solution that I would affect either, but there's two of you. So, I mean, you could manage that. Okay, when we're done with three devices, we turn them. We only need like two or three or four devices on it.
You want to argue with her about that?
No, I don't. That's why I said that's not the solution that I would personally end up taking. I would be a new router.
Yeah. Well, and one thing about going to a higher grade one is most of them have dual SSIDs, and so you can set up a high tier for like streaming stuff,
right,
and then a lower tier for your other devices that only sucking through, like, you know, oh, only 3 megabit.
Yeah, but anyway, that's pretty cool though.
So we nerded out on that. Let's see about that. What else? Rage.
Yes.
We never finished on Rage. I don't really have anything else to say about Rage.
No.
Except I'm apologizing. I think there is. If someone could go back even just a couple of years and say, so at QuakeCon, John Carmack's going to stand up on stage and apologize for half an hour for not taking care of PC gamers, people would have been flipping the fuck out. Be like, no way.
Yeah.
No.
That's true. Well, I mean, so what was it, Doom 3, where the development sort of process over it had shifted so that Carmack wasn't writing all the code himself?
Right.
So, you know, there's going to be an adjustment period. I don't care how talented your team is. Like, if you...
And they abandoned mobile.
Oh, yeah, they did. Well, I mean...
Well, anyone disappointed?
No. But, I mean, they had a lot of Rage support for that Rage game.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
I mean, well, I don't know. But didn't Carmack spend, like, hour two dedicated to how much he wished he could do more mobile?
That was kind of weird, wasn't it?
Yeah. So why would they not do mobile?
Because he was like, I don't know.
Isn't it quicker, cheaper, and then a faster turnaround for the money?
Well, it is, but if really, I mean, but you're not going to be like, oh my God, John Carmack created this awesome mobile game that's revolutionizing the industry. It's like, no.
Angry Mutants.
Yeah, and it's like, it looks
suggestion.
Shiny and cool.
I think it's just a reflection of how challenging it is to do, top tier major production games, which is something Irrational has run into. And when we come back on the other side of this break, we will talk about some of the rocky road that's being encountered by them as they approach the finish line for BioShock Infinite.
Serious drama-rama.
Drama-rama! You don't want to miss it. Stick around. Weekend Confirmed. We'll be right back. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games, And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. Free apps? No way!
Yeah, free apps.
I know. Wow, amazing. So, not free.
Oh, can I sneak in a quick free app thing real quick?
I'll allow it.
Since we were talking about it.
Well, the judge has spoken.
Okay, so sadly the bad part is it's an iPad only. But there's a game called Gasket Ball that just came out, which is it's basically horse, except throw in like pinball paddles and conveyor belts and flippers and all sorts of weird shit. So basically,
that's the way I play, obviously.
Obviously.
So the real way of playing horse.
Yeah. No, it's really fun. It's, you know, tons of levels in there, and you basically have a basketball and you're playing horse against this robot. And so you're having to,
of course,
you basically have to bounce it off certain surfaces in a certain order, and the levels get really, really crazy, and it's free, and I was kind of surprised. It's pretty cool.
Is there like a upgraded version if you want to continue playing or have an ad-free version?
I did not see any sort of in-app purchases, but again, I just started playing it, so maybe that will not be the case.
Is it all physics-based?
It is all physics-based.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's by Mike and Greg, who did... I can't remember.
The game was called Crap.
No, it wasn't called Crap. They did another.
Crap would sell. Crap would totally sell. And the tchotchkes we would get would be amazing.
Yeah. Boxed collector's edition.
You'd get like that. You'd totally get like that little plastic pile of poop they used to sell at Spencer's.
No, collector's edition. You get actual crap in there. Collector's edition.
No, that's something EA would sell at send out because they always don't quite get the gag. They're just a little bit wrong with what they send out. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. We didn't realize we shouldn't have sent you that.
Here's a giant dump from the lead developer.
Like, what?
Like, you're like, oh, great. It's autographed and everything.
Somebody had corn.
Right. This just took a weird turn.
Yeah.
If we could just go somewhere else with this.
Yeah, where's that cologne perfume that you need to air this bastard out of?
God, light a match already.
I know, right?
So, as we were talking about before the break, there's been some drama over at Irrational Games. First was the word of a couple of high-profile departures, one of them being Tim Gerritsen. Interesting tie back to the Dallas development community there, of course. Tim coming up out of 3D Realms and then moving up there to work as product development. What was his exact title? I do have it written down here. Director of Product Development. So, for those of you unacquainted with studio development cycles, director of product development has a very, very important role in getting a game to ship. So you imagine that there are a number of producers working on a game, keeping all of the various trains running. It's ultimately somebody's job to oversee the entire thing and make sure that each of both the creative and technical departments and their people who are managing them are all running to a point of actually making to shipping a product, right? We want to ship a product, working very closely, of course, with the executive producer and the rest of the production teams. So critical role.
Yeah.
Worried right off the bat, right? But yet there might be someone riding in on his silver charger to save things. And that would be Rod Ferguson, right, who is now rumored to be headed up to
Marcus Phoenix.
Oh, he did confirm.
Yeah, he confirmed this. He was the director of production at Epic Games, and he confirmed today that he would be taking over as, I believe, VP at Irrational.
So that's huge.
Yeah, big upgrade.
Well,
VP is a nice title.
Oh, I'm vice president. Yeah. Vice president of...
And I'm impressed.
I'm vice president of Weekend Confirmed.
As a lowly writer, I am impressed.
Awesome. I thought you were King Poobah. Yeah.
Hold on.
Confirmed.
Let me show you my business card, baby.
Yeah. okay. This is...
No, you don't want to see it.
No, okay.
Trust me.
All right. If I can get HR in here, that'd be great.
His business card.
We don't actually have HR. That was one of my first actions as vice president. HR, you're fired. Cost-cutting measures. I'm sorry. That's what we have to do sometimes. Yeah. We gotta watch the bottom line.
I get it. We're running this economy. I get it.
Yeah, you know, adjustments have to be made.
Right.
So,
go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to ask you guys if you're worried.
Actually...
Well, because Nate Wells, the art director for Irrational, also left.
Yes.
And there are rumors that he could be going to Naughty Dog.
Now, the art director thing is a bit more worrying to me than...
Me too.
So let's rewind here, first of all, to production.
Oh, that was a way better rewind sound. I'll work on it.
I want to do one now, too.
That was supposed to be better than mine, too. Yeah. God damn it. God.
You're gonna have to work on your Foley effects.
All right.
I think that
I think
rewind
sound.
I think this change might actually be pretty good. Shipping a game series like Gears. I mean, think about how hard it is to pull together a Gears of War. You know, especially as you get into 2 and 3 and you're under all of that pressure to add new features and to make the campaign better and to make each game incrementally larger than the last
one, always topping yourself. And they're pretty much not annual, but like they're on a schedule. Like, at least with Bioshock Infinite, they basically could do whatever they wanted. I mean, I was worried when the first delay happened, when it was pushed from 2012 to 2013. That's when I started to worry. Yeah. Because I mean, I imagine Ken Levine is just as a perfectionist, and this is something I feel like he probably wasn't happy with Bioshock 2. Obviously, they didn't do that game, but it's still his legacy. It's his game.
Yeah.
And so you probably really wanted to make this game great, and so I have to wonder, like, what were the reasons of the delay? And they said it was to add more polish, but like, you know, how much time do you need to make something perfect?
Well, and that's true. They were talking about multiplayer stuff too,
right?
Right.
Job postings and like, yeah.
So
yeah.
To wrap up the departures, Nate Wells, who was the art director, left, and one of the comments that was made, I believe it was in the weird phone call. I mean, I guess it's not weird, but the phone call that Ken did with Kotaku, which, by the way, if you're a developer, I realize that Kotaku has a huge, huge audience. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, maybe not as huge as it used to be because of all the Gawker redesign fallout. But
yeah, I couldn't find the interview, so.
But. I want to be considerate because I like the folks at Kotaku. I don't necessarily agree with their editorial direction all the time. And I think that some of that, to a degree, reflects how they're trying to position the publication. So I don't necessarily hold that against the individuals that are, you know, I don't hold that as something that's representative of just those individuals' positioning. That having been said, if you're a developer, given the amount of times that Kotaku pisses off developers, why would the first person you call be Kotaku? Even if they called you, there's lots of other people who probably called you. I mean,
well,
whether it be Joystick or
friend.
And I'm not saying that as disgruntled that, you know, we didn't get a response. I'm just saying that, like, if the development community doesn't like the way that Kotaku portrays them and manipulates headlines and uses them as a mechanism to generate traffic for their site, then don't empower them by giving them content like this.
Yeah, well, it's definitely an all eggs in one basket sort of approach to messaging, which I think is, in a case like this, you know, yeah, I understand the impulse to do that because basically you're like, look,
you know you're going to get the word out.
And we only want to have this conversation once.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's a lot of stuff we got to get out and it's, you know, people are going to be freaking out. So let's, you know, filter it through one source and then everybody else, you know, kind of, you know, picks the carcass a little bit. But I don't know. I think it would have been received a little bit better if he had been more communicative with
Why not just do like what Ted did in Insomniac and just do a YouTube?
Oh, that works too.
Prop a camera up in your conference room and be like, here's the deal. Bam, 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 done. YouTube post.
Right.
Yeah, and if you do that from your official channel, then at least you're getting the views and it's coming back to you.
Yeah.
And you can control the message and promote what you want to promote. I mean, that's a good idea.
So anyway, so one of the things that he said was that, you know, by and large, the art direction for Infinite is wrapped up. And that resonates pretty. I mean, if you're at a point where you're going to ship in the first part of 2013.
It's still quite a few months, though.
So art might not be finished, but creative direction for it is certainly pretty fixed. I mean, this game has been under development for a couple of years now. They have a pretty clear idea of what the artistic palette is that they're working from.
Yeah, they should know exactly more or less what it is they have left to build, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and all the artists working on it, I'm sure, have been, you know, really, like, they're starting to, you know, just probably see all that stuff in their dreams of, like, here's what my dreamscape looks like. Why does it look like Bioshock Infinite in here?
Right. So maybe the loss of the art director or that change in that position doesn't worry me.
And they got the art director from Bioshock 1 back in.
Was it Scott Sinclair, I want to say? Something like that.
I didn't write all that many notes.
And a lot of the original Bioshock dudes are still, you know, still there, still working on it.
But it's obviously nerve-wracking, and I feel bad for them. I feel this is another one of those cases, again, talking about like how media covers games, this is another one of those cases as well where sometimes the magnifying glass on what happens in the shop while a game is being made is just like ridiculous, because Ken gave a part of it where he just sort of rattles off all these people who still are working on the game.
Right.
And to be frank, it's like he shouldn't need to feel that defensive about it, because the bottom line is what they've shown us so far has everybody excited. Everybody's super gung-ho for the game, right? We love the creative direction and the creative stuff we've seen about it. And that we've put him on the defensive like that kind of sucks.
Well, maybe he wasn't being on the defense. I mean, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but maybe he
wasn't
being defensive. Maybe he was more like, hey, yeah, that sucks, but here's maybe like giving a pat on the back to everyone who has been working really hard.
I hope so.
Or maybe he's defensive because we don't know why they left. Like, it's a little weird that two major players leaves before the
game launches.
And
why the fuck do we need to? Honestly, do we really need to be digging in their shit for that
stuff?
Yeah,
because we need to.
Why?
Because we're nosy?
Okay, that is a explanation I will accept, but I'd also say
because
like,
we're interested, because we're waiting, because they haven't really, they weren't in E3, they haven't released any trailers, they haven't released any press releases, and
enthusiasts,
because we're
but we don't need to get up in their shit like that, I don't think.
No. The way that, no, but I mean, enthusiasts want to know those little details about their chosen hobby, right? Like, movie buffs want to know, like,
absolutely, how
did
many
this film change directors,
blogs?
Like, who's, you know, been recast, like, who's a problem on set, like, people just want to know that shit, and yeah, it's none of their business, but
it makes you feel like you're part of the process in some weird, sad way. But, like, I do. Like, I like to know what's going on.
But what you really want is Bioshock Infinite to live up to the expectations of that badass stuff you've seen so far.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what you really want.
And there's still no reason, for at least for me, like, practically, why I wouldn't think that it's going to deliver. Because, I mean, I'm willing to give Irrational the benefit of the doubt at this point. Like, they haven't done me wrong yet, really.
There's really nothing they could do at this point for me not to buy the game.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. Like, all this gossip and drama and, like, who's leaving and who's directing now. Like, it's just stuff for us to talk about in the meantime.
They could put Space Marines in it.
That'd be great.
And bugs.
And zombies.
All those things would be welcomed additions. Preferably as DLC that to buy a season pass for.
God. I know.
I'm lying.
So, it does speak, though, to how difficult it is to pull together these projects.
Yes.
So Ken closed, or at least in the article that Kotaku wrote off the interview, said, when you're trying to innovate, the path is not always clear and these things take time. But I guarantee this, the next time we show you guys the game, the judge will be you, not me. And as you spoke to, Jeff, one of the things that came up is that they've apparently had a number of design exercises that have chewed up resources towards making multiplayer modes, and allegedly, those modes haven't worked out. Mm-hmm. Now, you could argue that that's because they're trying to ensure that people keep the game and don't trade it in and work against the trade-in.
Playability, buy DLC, all that
stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
See, the conspiracy theorist in me envisions a scenario where, you know, publishers telling Levine, yeah, you got to throw multiplayer in there. Everybody likes multiplayer. And he's like, all right, we'll put some multiplayer in there. And
that could well be.
And then he kind of sandbags the, you know, or whatever, they mock up a few multiplayer modes and put a lot, but it sounds like they put a lot of work into some of these modes, right? So
Which
it's a lot of man hours.
It hasn't been confirmed, though.
But no, none of them confirmed. One of them was a Spec Ops cooperative mission mode, and the other one was supposed to be like a tower defense thing where you were miniaturized, dropped into an arcade machine, and held off waves of enemies.
I mean, it sounds great, but where does that fit in Bioshock Infinite at all?
Well, it's like Bioshock without multiplayers, like, what is it? Pizza without popcorn on it or something? Like, you don't need it. Like,
you don't want it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Bioshock 2's, that, you know, separate studio, but like their multiplayer was okay. Like, good on them for doing that. But like, that's not why I buy Bioshock game. That's not why I buy that. I buy it because I saw the trailer and I'm like, whoa, look at this interactive, like, cinematic, crazy experience.
I can chew bees out of my hand.
Yeah.
Keep talking.
That's the kind of stuff. Yeah.
Well, we'll
see.
I'm not losing any faith. Any faith because the creative team that can come up with the stuff they've shown already that's gotten me excited for this game, whether it be Elizabeth or the Skylines or any of the rest of it, clearly has a baseline creative vision that's gotten me excited enough about in the game that I'm really engaged. And I suspect that part of what's gone on here, from the way he put that, is that they have the freedom in developing this game to pursue lots of different ideas.
Right.
And the thing of that is that as creative folks know, if you pursue a lot of ideas, there's some that just don't work out.
Right.
And those will eat up time. And as you're going over a long project, that can also be tiring for folks. So it could ultimately work out even better because they explored so many great ideas and had the freedom to do that. They just need to bring it home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of, I still have a lot of faith in the game. None of this personnel shakeup stuff. Yeah, it's nice gossip and it keeps the game in the.
You know, plus, Sean Elliott's
talking
there.
About it for
keeps
a while.
Keeps clicks on the blogs, and that's what you know. Yeah. That's where my mind is.
But and what was his sort of wrap up statement? He was like, you know, it's not going to be me telling you how good the game
you're
is.
Gonna be
you're
going to
see it for yourself. That's pretty confident, right?
Yeah.
Does that mean a demo?
Well,
does that mean a demo? That's a good question.
It
I
sounds
don't know.
Like I need to make my own opinion, and if I do that, it shouldn't be with a trailer.
Hmm.
Did BioShock 1 or 2 have a demo?
I can't remember. I want to say, I don't even know.
I feel like there was a multiplayer beta.
It would have been after the fact though, not pre-release. I don't think there was a pre-release demo.
It'll be playable like at Gamescom or PAX Prime.
Maybe they have like a show floor.
When's it come
demo.
Out? February. So yeah, I guess that the last one it could be playable at is TGS, and they wouldn't do that.
No. He did reaffirm that the game would be coming out in February 2013. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Which is such a busy time. Like, ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm going to buy it.
Yeah, me too. I might buy two just to, like, have options.
Right.
Upstairs Xbox, downstairs Xbox.
Or no. You could just carry just the kidding. Disc upstairs. Yeah.
That's silly.
So, what have you guys been playing lately?
A lot of iOS stuff. Played some GTA 4.
Dude, you had the weirdest vacation experience. You go on vacation and you start up like...
Is it really staycation?
It was a staycation. Well, I had girlfriend's mom coming in from out of town, so we did Disneyland. We did a bunch of beach time and stuff. So I had little pockets of game. It wasn't like
Disneyland, or did you do California?
Just Disneyland, because she had never been. So, and it was kind of busy, and we were like... I did get season passes, so...
I have them too.
I'm
good
all,
to know.
All squared away there, so I'll be going back to see Cars and all that sort of stuff. But
I love that place. I love Disneyland so much.
Yeah,
like a pathetic amount.
No, it's all, that's where my parents met. Actually, they were both working there.
Really?
Yeah.
Cute.
So
super
I'm a Disney
cute.
Kid. Yeah. So.
But GTA 4, like, what about Disneyland inspired you to go back?
Oh no.
Have you been there in the summer?
Yeah.
You're like, oh God, I wish I had a baseball bat right now.
Right.
If I had a car.
I know. Yeah, I'd just drive straight to Indiana Jones over all these people. No, the hype for, or the, sorry, they just started kicking off the viral marketing for GTA 5,
yeah.
Which, you know, I'm a big fan of Rockstar's open world stuff. You know, even the stuff that I realize is not imperfect, like GTA 4, you know, the flow of that game, revisiting it after all these years is like, okay, yeah. They do have a pacing problem with that game, and it doesn't really start to get, you know, exciting and action-packed until several hours in.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't even get a gun until, like, you know, half a dozen missions into the game. So, you know, there problems aside, there's stuff about that open world, like, you know, mess around sort of atmosphere that I really, really, really enjoy. And, you know, a lot of that still holds up. Like, I think they did a great job with the vehicle physics in that game. And, yeah, it's a lot different and less arcadey than the stuff they did before. But there's a lot of stuff that compels me to play that. Like, I mean, I spent a lot of time just playing the, you know, optional steal cars for Brucey missions just because, you know, that was the thing that was in the Grand Theft Auto 3 and earlier. It was just like, you know, find this car, steal it, bring it back to a garage. But I love doing that stuff.
So are you at all interested in Sleeping Dogs?
You know, I am cautiously very excited for that.
Cautiously
very excited.
Well, you're like, I'm gonna stand over here, but I'm really fucking excited.
Well, that used to be a true crime game, right?
Yeah, True Crime Hong Kong. Yeah.
Well, and before that, it was not a true crime game because it originally was United Front's game that they were working on, and then they got in with the Activision publishing deal, which slapped the True Crime name on it.
Right.
Because keep in mind, like, True Crime was game one, and then game two was the Snoop Dogg game.
Yeah, that's just... And next
is wait a while. Oh, let's go to Hong Kong.
Those were like garage sale GTA games. You know, they were like...
I think you're throwing them under the bus a little too much there.
I am looking at them through the filter of nostalgia and remembering...
There's not a lot of nostalgia for True Crime.
No, but just like how
they were all right.
How I remember them is not fond.
Yeah.
Or fondly or whatever.
I just don't remember them, so...
Yeah.
There's that. I'm excited for Sleeping Dogs. I played it at PAX East, and I played it again at E3. Did a bunch of different kinds of missions. I did, like, so you can basically, what I took away from it is that it's GTA 4 meets Rush Hour 2, and you can impale someone on just about anything.
What you talking about?
Yeah.
What?
So that's basically where I'm at with the game. I mean, I saw on NeoGAF that it's, like, all these, like, early reviews that I don't know how they got reviews already, but they're really good reviews. And so people are really seeming to like this game, and it has gun mechanics, and, like, you have these, like, Max Payne-ish slow-mo moves, and there's melee, and there's really dramatic one-liners, like cop, like buddy cop kind of one-liners, like, you're
book
a cop,
Dano.
You're a cop, but I'm an undercover cop. Like, those are the lines. Like, it's actually a line featured in one of the commercials.
Nice.
Yeah. But it's like, it's just this, like, ridiculous, so over the top, Hong Kong, based in Hong Kong, which is a world I've never played a game in. And I don't know, it's GTA.
Hey, as long as the writing's better than Just Cause 2, which, based on what you said, it may not be.
I'm an undercover cop.
I'm an undercover.
Spoiler, guys, he's an undercover cop trying to infiltrate the triads.
I haven't played it as much as you have, and I am less enthusiastically, cautiously, speculatively, moderately engaged by potential excitement potential in this.
Maybe you should qualify that comment a little bit.
Could you elaborate?
You know, I really like UFG, and I love the effort they put into it. And you know, I saw this game years ago and thought it was cool then. I think one of the biggest difficulties they have is because of the publishing lapse that they had. Their engine tech has been aged a little further than it would have been had it had a regular development cycle and come out on pace that it had originally been set to. Right.
So graphically, or
I was going to say, as someone who's never played the game, and all I've seen is trailers and stuff, two major questions. One is, does it look as good as the trailers, or is that kind of like a little, like, it, the high res illusion that you get when you're watching?
Well,
stuff
I think
online.
It's more, I think that the differentiation comes in animation a lot of times. So you're playing Grand Theft Auto right now.
Yeah.
Doesn't it stand out to you, even just a couple years later, how everybody and your character included animates just not at a state of current technology? You know, they're rough.
It's the precursor to Red Dead, which,
and they were getting better.
Yeah.
They were getting better.
They're still getting better.
Red Dead, and then we're getting better now. And that's one of those areas that I think we still see enough advancement year over year that if you go back and play a game, like, I'm going to talk about Lost Odyssey here in a little while, and that's a 2008 game, and good God, the animations are dreadful in that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because of where it was and where they were with Unreal Engine tech. So my thing about Sleeping Dogs, though, to not get too far away from that, is that what I played the most of and what I am most confident in is actually the driving part.
Really?
Because, well, so keep in mind, they're up in Vancouver, and they were able to rescue a bunch of old Need for Speed Black Box guys. So the driving cycle in this open world game is actually pretty solid. Which, if you think about it, in Grand Theft, is just the opposite, right? Well, I mean, not just the opposite, but the driving can get frustrating there, right?
Well, here's the thing that we could have a whole conversation about driving evolution in Grand Theft Auto games. I mean, it went from, like, your car flips over at the, you know, somebody breaks wind next to it and the thing flips over and it blows up, to, you know, 4, where it's like, okay, yeah, you can flip your car over and it can take a lot of punishment, and it kind of drive like you're driving an old, you know, what looks like an old Chrysler. It feels like a boat, like an old Chrysler, you know. And it does take some adjustment. It is not the arcadey racing. I actually think in an open world game, GTA 4 probably has my favorite, vehicle stuff.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do horses count as vehicles?
Not variety. Well, because
Red Dead was so easy to navigate on that horse.
No, that's true. And I think they did a brilliant job there, and probably a slightly better job than they did with the cars. But it's an easier sort of, like, you don't have traffic patterns, and you don't have, I mean, yeah, you got
armadillos.
Right. Yeah. You're not, like, worried about, you know,
people.
Modern conventions and stuff. I think it's also harder to do an open world game in the, you know, in a city like that, because everyone pays attention to every detail, and the first time you see a detail that doesn't mesh with your expectations are, you're like,
because
oh, this
you drive in the city every day, especially if you live in a city, you're accustomed to driving in the city, and now you're like, well, I wonder what would really happen if I tried to drive 75 down a 35 mile an hour crowded street in rush hour.
Yeah, exactly. And you notice, like, oh, I can only go into like 5% of the buildings here, and that sort of stuff.
5% is generous for GTA 4.
Probably is. Yeah.
Well, watch Sleeping Dogs. I think the catch for me is going to be how well the combat works out in it. Because, you know, getting into the fights, since it's ostensibly in a kung fu
yeah,
game.
Yeah, melee combat. I was going to ask you guys.
Yeah,
did you guys get
they
to
said
that
they were like inspired by cinematic Chinese movies and like kind of the over-the-top martial art movies. And it did feel inspired by that. The melee's quick and like you can, it's a lot of defending and then stunning and then attacking and then eventually you get a gun and then you don't really need to punch people as much, you know.
So does it feel, I hope it's worlds better than, because GTA's melee is pretty garbage.
No, it's definitely the fighting. There's a dojo where you go upgrade your combos. Like fighting's a main part of the game. Fighting's not something you do when you can't find a gun. Fighting's like, there's a lot of sequences where you have to like actually do hand-to-hand combat.
And impaling dudes on stuff.
And then you impale people. And then you shove someone's face into an air conditioner and then like the blades chop their face off.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And then there's like, you can shove people's faces into, shove people's faces is a theme. It's a reoccurring theme in the game.
Face shoving.
Yeah, yeah, and into like a hot stove and like impale them onto like sides of buildings. And
got some Punisher going on in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a little violent. But probably rated T.
It's probably not going to be nearly as good as I want it to be, but I'm definitely curious to play it.
Well, it's that or Darksiders 2 next week, so. Yeah.
Darksiders 2. Rock that shit.
Yeah?
Seriously.
I haven't played it yet.
Seriously.
Did you play one?
I watched it on my list. I've been watching Ariel play it because then she got distracted. But like seriously, Darksiders 2, from what I've been able to play and check out of that in preview events, seriously.
Okay, yeah, no, I'm definitely hope that's really good because I liked the first one quite a bit.
Yeah, the first one obviously was a great beneficiary of underground, you know, word of mouth discussion of it being Zelda-like. Mm-hmm. And that sort of took on a life of its own. Mm-hmm. And I think it's merited from what I watched of the way once you get into the dungeon cycle with it, there's certainly a merit to that.
Right.
But I think that also is shoehorning it a little too much. Because
graphically, it's like God of War Ninja Gaiden for me. Ninja Gaiden 2.
Yeah.
Just all the hack and slash, all the like little orbs flying everywhere.
It reminds me of...
I think Joe Mad's art is way underrated because, you know, it, comparatively, when Todd McFarlane gets a gig, he always gets a lot of attention. But mm-hmm. then I see his stuff in game and it doesn't live up to what I would expect with the name attached to it. And then I see Joe Mad's stuff in Darksiders and I'm like, fuck yeah, that's good.
Does Mark Hamill do a voice in it? Because he did a voice in the first one.
I have no idea. But Princess Leia is in Dishonored.
Oh, yeah. She is?
Yeah. Yeah. Along with Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, that I heard. Whoa.
And Michael Madsen.
It's a weird
and
trend of
Cersei
like
Lannister.
Super popular actors being voices in the game. Like back to Sleeping Dogs, Lucy Liu and Emma Stone and some other really famous people who weren't at the launch party last night.
See, that's what I was going to say is that we didn't get around to that, but was that the cast for Sleeping Dogs is certainly of a caliber to pull off the atmospheric side of it correctly. I don't know.
I'm a cop. You're an undercover cop. Or whatever.
Yeah. I didn't say who wrote the game. I mean.
Yeah, true. But yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we can confirm Jeff Cannata Watch continues. He's not here yet. That could bode well. He evidently texted he was on his way 20 minutes ago, which in Los Angeles
means nothing.
He could be here 5 minutes from now or 5 hours from now. So whatever, stick around. You don't have to wait more than a couple of seconds. We'll be right back with the second half of the show. I think that's the celebration music they were playing in Jet Propulsion Labs when the lander touched down on Mars.
Hell yeah.
Allegedly. I'm just kidding.
Oh, big score. Or somewhere in the desert outside Las Vegas.
Somewhere
in
Lucasfilm, yeah.
Oh, my God. What was the name of that?
That could be Lancaster, guys.
Was that like a 70s movie? Or Capricorn 1.
Oh, the fake.
The fake moon landing. The fake moon landing movie. Yeah, a classic stupid sci-fi. Well, not stupid. A classic, you know, conspiracy theory movie.
Yeah. Flat Earth Society and those guys and a whole bunch of, yeah.
Anyway, awesome stuff. Did either of you land the Mars rover with your Kinect?
No, but I did watch the landing from my Xbox.
Did you really?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
It was nice. It was actually really, really cool. It was like on the front page of the dashboard, and it was really easy to access, and it downloaded up right away. And
do you have a Kinect setup?
Yeah.
Well, you should land the rover.
All right.
Turn into the space crane, land the rover.
Then everyone can awkwardly high-five me?
Yeah. There's a button to do that. You just press B. It's like,
press
bam.
Press B to high-five?
Yeah. They're gonna include that in Army of Two.
That'd be cool.
That sounds like another reason to get a Kinect, I guess. I still don't
Mars know. Rover landings?
Yeah, it's, not really.
I mean, it's a reason.
I mean, I'm still like every time I go into Best Buy or something or look on Amazon, I'm always like, can I justify buying that? No, not really.
Mine just creepily moves when I walk by.
I do want to talk to Commander Shepard, but that's all I want to do with my Kinect.
That's his Kinect sound.
That's me watching. That's Kinect watching you. It's constantly adjusting and watching. It's funny, actually, moved into apartment finally where I had space to set all this stuff up.
Right.
Totally have not. The Kinect is still sitting next to the 360, like with the wire wrapped around it.
Huh?
You know what is set up?
Hmm.
My PlayStation Eye camera.
Really?
I know. Hi. You're like, what?
Are you playing iPad? Be honest.
Of course. Of course. We got the new cat, and you know, we play with the iPad and the cat together. And no, actually not totally doing that. Okay. 4 a.m.
I was kind of believing him. Like, really? The cat likes it? Cool, right?
Yeah.
Cat plays with it, like get a little trampoline out, and then I throw the cat up in the air and I see if I can get it to land on the same spot that
That's
the
safe.
iPad cat is.
It's PETA approved.
It's a cat. Yeah. It lands on its feet.
Yeah, most of the time.
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
4
a.m.
Yes, 4 a.m.
Because,
right.
Because I was super high to play that and finally have a place to play it, and holy shit, is so fucking fun.
Really?
Yeah, especially if you like music. So I had played 4 a.m. a few times at the Pixel Junk offices. Of course, I've been friends with Dylan and some of the other folks there for a long time. And it did live up to my expectation that actually having it to play would make it more sensible the more I played it and more fun to play with than just demoing it. And one of the things I really learned about the game, so 4 a.m. is a game that isn't really a game. It's a music experience where you use the Move controller to, as they describe it, paint your own music compositions from a palette of music that has been composed by Bion. So painting is actually a very accurate analogy here, because not only are you using the Move controller like a brush in pulling things out of a virtual canvas into the center of the screen and painting music, so to say, but you're not constructing music strictly speaking from the ground up. You have a set of, you know, when you go to Home Depot and
and okay. What? No. And, first of all, no.
I know.
And there's paint chips.
Yeah.
And the paint chips, like, can be, they'll show you like pieces of paint that go together so that you don't just do something awful like mix chartreuse and mauve or something.
Which would be atrocious, by the way. Just awful.
Right. Would be terrible. So
mauve-truce. Yeah, really bad.
Yes. unless it was a falcon. Anyway.
Mauve-truce falcon. Starring Humphrey Bogart.
So the point of this is that it sort of saves you from completely making a train wreck out of things, and at the same time gives you a tremendous amount of empowerment to play around with it because all of those pieces go together. So let me explain. The thing that I also really figured out is that the pieces that I thought were the core part of the game are actually more of the foundation, And the funner, the more the holy Jeff Cannata watch. Hold on, drum roll, folks.
What is up?
Oh, there he is.
Hey.
Oh, look, he is in character.
Sorry, I'm late.
He's playing drunk guy number three and a wife beater in slacks.
Now, so the 405 freeway is created by the devil.
Obviously.
So how about that 405, guys?
What did I miss? We got a sig alert on the 405 at Wilshire. It's backed up for about 45 minutes.
Going both directions.
Yeah, going both directions. Airport into the valley is going to be about an hour and 15 minutes for your ride right now. Boy, it's a hot one out there, too, isn't it, Jeff?
What's
the weather forecast?
Well, we're going I was trying to, can't do my helicopter.
That was pretty good.
All right.
Sorry to crash the party.
I can't talk and do that at the same time.
It's been a long time since we've seen any rain, too. We could really use that, huh?
I don't know what city you're supposed to be from. What did I miss?
A horrible show that's gone terribly awry.
I thought it was all right, but, you know, that's just my own personal positive opinion.
I'm in a mood. There's been, you know, crazy, rampant
This is the non-sequitur show.
Yeah. Oh, this one?
Yeah. This
As
one.
Opposed to all those other ones that are not non-sequitur shows?
Yeah.
Awesome.
This segment, we started off talking about how connects are actually there to spy on you from the government, though you can use them to land the Mars rover. Virtually, or watch the landing of it in Nevada or Mars, depending on whether you believe on it actually went there or if it's just part of the faked conspiracy.
I say it's in Lancaster. They're located in Pasadena. Lancaster is not a long drive. There's a lot of nothing out there. Maybe Palmdale. Palmdale could be Mars. Easy.
Palmdale could be Mars.
Yeah, and the moral of the story is we hate it when no new games come out.
Yeah.
So anyway, which led to my Kinect not being hooked up, but... Now that I have space in my house, having my PlayStation Eye hooked up so that I could play, well, obviously, Virtua Pet. And there was some cat tossing in there as well. But then we got on to 4 a.m.
Oh.
Naturally.
So now you're caught up.
All right.
Now you're caught up. And I was explaining how 4 a.m. is really cool because I had a sort of an inkling of an idea how it worked from having seen it many times with Dylan and those guys. And that it lived up to my expectations of really opening up the more I played with it. Mm-hmm. So the basic foundation of 4AM is that it has a series of musical compositions that Bion put together. Each of them has four structural components, a percussive line, a bass line, a synth line, and then
a chorus line,
more or less.
Fabulous.
Uh-huh.
More or less, right? And so those correspond to the different buttons on your move controller, right? So you can switch between them, and you can use the buttons to bring them in individually or solo them, and you're creating compositions with them. And then each of the four corners of your virtual screen in front of you allow you to pull in one of four different tracks of that style. So, you know, for percussion, you would have four different phrases of percussion. One of them is probably like a hi-hat-y sort of thing. Another one's maybe like a little more syncopated hi-hat. Another one probably has like a little more snare to it. Anyway, you understand where I'm going with all that?
Mm-hmm.
So you paint. What I found is that I thought putting those things together in different mixes would be the way that I would be making music, quote unquote, would be like, you know, I'd be like pulling stuff in and mixing those together. But what happens is you pretty quickly figure out how you like to put those together, and they form a bunch of similar canvases. And the real like secret sauce to the game is the one shots. And each of the track pieces, bass, percussion, synth, and lead, have one shots, which you wave the move controller left, right, up, or down, and it makes a unique one shot, quote unquote, sound. So if you have, you know, like the percussion, maybe wave left is snare, wave right is tom, wave up is cymbal, wave down is bass. So what I figured out is, and then the real genius to this is you can pull the trigger on your move controller and create your own sequenced loops of those one shots, and you can build them as far out as you want to. So putting this all together, because you can also switch from music to music to music. I can start up a 4 a.m. session. I can grab a bass line out of one track, switch over to another track and grab the percussion that I like out of that, switch over to another track and grab, say, the lead and synth out of that, and then go through all of the tracks and find the different lead, synth, bass, and percussion one-shots that I like and actually play music over the top by putting in loops. So I've got all this music going in the background. Imagine I have like a foundation background going, right? And then I start improvising. This is where you get to really improvise, which is what's really cool. Like, then you start improvising with the one-shots, which you can individually, well, you can create loops by instrument type. So I can loop as much percussion as I want, but then I can kill the percussion loop but keep my bass loop going. So I can start mixing and matching and pulling together all kinds of crazy crap to layer on top of the foundation I make.
So yes or no, are you available for bar mitzvahs?
Yes.
Like,
of course.
Are you really good?
Yeah, it's awesome. I've got that part down, it's so fun. And I do have to say that, like, boys and girls, if you're over the legal age, the more you loosen up, the more you will enjoy it.
That's what I was going
to
ask
then
you.
Then it gets really freaking cool.
Because to me, it seems like a almost like, you know, adult beverage required. Or that's when I would be inspired to.
You need to get it down first.
I think you need to get glaucoma in order to play this game.
I think that's
what's intended for.
Or anxiety.
I have
insomnia.
To admit, I hate to hop into the podcast and be the poopy to your pants, but I played this game for about 15 minutes at GDC, and that's about as much as I ever need to play it. I just don't have the patience.
You are coming to my house, and we are going to play this.
Okay.
You're going to come to my house, and we're going to make tasty beverages, then we will play this.
I like everything so far.
We will play this because...
Sweet music together.
15 minutes totally doesn't make it.
I just felt like...
Do you like music, though?
Yeah, of course I like music.
But I mean, like, do you like the idea of improvising your own music?
Yes. Okay. I just found there to be... I found myself to have very little patience for, like, the amount that I could change it did not impress me enough for the time commitment required to, know what I mean?
I would agree with you on first blush, and that's why I'm so excited to be explaining about the one-shot piece, because what I thought was the thing that I would be customizing was like that, and it wasn't until I realized the magic of the trigger on the bottom that lets me create loops.
Right.
And if you haven't, like think about, have you seen how a music sequencer works?
Sure.
And so you can create loops, and now imagine that I can create, I've got four tracks of different instrument styles, of which I can do four sounds over a series of different songs, and I can loop each one of these individually and bring them in and out as I want to, all under command. So right. I can do all of that and create any sort of infinitely changing, dynamically improvised loop on top of where I want to. I can, like, be creating my own music on top of whatever I laid on the bottom.
Do you really feel like you were creating your own music?
Yes.
Because I didn't feel like the input of the game was fun enough to make it better than sitting down with GarageBand, if that's what I want to do. I didn't feel like the visualization and the input was game enough to make it a fun game experience, and the music creation part wasn't music creation-y enough to make it a fun music. It just lives in this netherworld between the two.
I think when I show you what I'm talking about with one shots and you start to bring that in, that it totally changes the complexion. But even trying to explain it, I realize I was really struggling to try and explain to you how it works.
Can you save the music tracks and share them
in any way? Which totally sucks.
Someone can hop in and watch you compose live.
I was envisioning an awesome music break for Weekend Confirmed coming up.
I mean, I guess
you would think that would be the one feature you would want.
Right. Yeah. Well, that is exactly where I'm like, this is all great, but like, if it's just me in my living room, and I mean, I guess you could invite people over and go.
Well, the whole point is that it's supposed to be a live experience, never to be duplicated.
What's the benefit of restricting you so much from creating your own music?
You can always hook a Zoom up to it.
Oh, true. But I mean, I mean, it would be nice if that, like, the idea of something like that behind that is like, oh yeah, let's share, let's create and share and do a whole bunch of cool stuff. And
I completely agree. Yeah. I completely agree.
Side note, Nicole, rad skull ring.
Oh, thank
you're
you.
Rocking.
Yeah, I got it at Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, nice.
Bringing it back to Disneyland.
At Disneyland.
Yeah.
Wow. There's a store right out front, and they have really cool pirate rings. So, if you're interested.
Pretty awesome. I've been playing Little Big Planet on the Vita.
Oh, nice.
Really?
Yeah,
I think I can talk about it. I'm pretty sure I can talk about it.
Can you? The regular one.
What do you mean, the regular
one? Not the karting one.
Right, not
right,
the carting
okay,
one.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I think we're good. But...
Embargo breaking? We never do that on this shoe, Modern Warfare.
What?
What? Multiplayer.
Andy, hey.
I don't know. What segment are we in right now?
The seventh segment.
And how far into that segment are we?
We are 23 hours into it. We're in our 23rd hour coverage of the...
All right. So, Little Big Planet on the Vita.
Is that going to affect your commentary at all?
Yes.
I'll tone it
back. How far into it am I going to get?
Okay.
Do you guys want to hear about it?
After finishing moves. No, I'm just kidding.
It's Tell
me about your sack boy.
I feel like this is the device that this game was made for.
Why is it better than the console?
Touch. In a word, touch.
Oh, well, to quote Ace Ventura, oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, playing a platformer on a handheld, it just works. It's just it's the kind of game that one likes to play on a handheld. It's the levels are easily compartmentalized. You can pick it up, play a couple.
Handheld's easy to throw when you get pissed off at it.
Well, there's a lot of things that are easy to throw. It adds
another time, kids.
Touch to the levels themselves, so you're physically manipulating things in the environment, which I actually found a teensy bit clunky just because the size of the Vita screen is such that you're forced to take your hand off of one of the sticks and use your index finger or one of your fingers to – you can't – it's not really possible to just keep your hand in position like a controller and just use your thumb over there. You really have to disengage your hand and then re-engage your hand.
So you prefer the screen to be smaller?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that some of the implementation of the touch in the levels themselves – for example, you will have to you'll have to reorganize things on the screen. You can physically touch certain blue aura'd objects, and you'll have to leap into the air, move something, and then move your guy. So you're really doing a gymnastic between, your hand on the controller proper and then your hand on the touchscreen and back again in a short period of time, which is kind of a neat mechanic, but it ends up being a little bit clunky.
What I really need to know before we go any further about any Little Big Planet game, especially since you brought up the platform.
Are there costumes?
No.
There's lots of costumes.
That wasn't the one question you were going to ask?
The jump and the controls.
It's the same. It's the same.
Then I rule the rest of your argument invalid.
Well, okay. For the people that actually enjoy Little Big Planet like me... I hear you. I hear you on the jump. I hear you on any time you leap to something, grab on it, and swing on it. None of that feels like it should feel. It should all feel very, more like Mario, really.
That's
right. But I still enjoy those games a lot. I get past that and still enjoy those games despite their floaty jump.
I have a soft spot for Media Molecule, but more than anything in the world, that game needs to solve that problem.
It
solves that problem, and it moves forward. It doesn't solve that problem, and it really doesn't move forward.
Well, it doesn't solve that problem, but for people that enjoy Little Big Planet, I think this is a fantastic version of Little Big Planet.
Is it the same game as the original release, or is it a remake?
No, it's got new stuff, new level. Like I said, it's got those touch levels in the game. It's got a whole new... I mean, it's similar, obviously, but it's there's new levels and new stuff to do, and... the actual construction of levels is far and away improved because you can touch what you want to make.
Right.
You know, applying stickers, building objects, all the creation stuff just works better because I can just drag things around and I don't have to worry about a cursor.
Right.
You know, now, my finger is the cursor.
That was one of the things about the first couple Little Big Planets is that, you know, this whole creation system was touted as being so great and blah, blah, blah. And then you get into it and then you get really into it and you see some of the really intricate stuff people are building. It's like, man, just learn to fucking code. You'd be a lot faster and you can make more shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's really, maybe. Really, like, people do some really crazy
collectively,
stuff.
Collectively, around this table, how many Little Big Planet levels have we made?
What do you mean? Define level. Because I made some shit. But
was it a level?
Was it a level?
A level that you could hop into and play from beginning to end.
Was it a complete experience with an emotional arc?
Yeah, no. Yes. It was some shit over here, some shit over there.
I got a block right there. I made that block blue.
Three lives. I'm going to have three lives on here. Yeah. There's some, so for some electric shit.
Well on your way to game design. Well, yeah.
For as enthusiastic as you are then about the ability to create and the way it works so well with the touch interface of the Vita, which I don't doubt because I've been playing sound shapes and I can talk about that too.
Yeah.
I'm curious how much that really will matter to you a week from now.
Well, I'm not the guy that's going to sit around and make levels. I like the fact that making levels feels way more intuitive. I appreciate that from afar. I can go, that's a better implementation of this design. I'm not going to particularly use it, but that doesn't mean I can't appreciate it.
Are you the guy that's going to play other people's levels? Is there a strong community for this game? Because on the PSN or the PS3 version, there was definitely tons of people making levels, and you can play any of them.
And there's so many amazing ones.
Yeah.
Amazing ones. I have to admit, I haven't yet ventured into the...
Baby steps.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to get through the whole campaign that's built in first. Well, and I don't think the game's out yet.
It's not out. You're in review code.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't even know if that's... I haven't even looked. But I'm playing through the Media Molecule levels, and they're all fantastic, and... It looks so good on the Vita. It really does. It's beautiful. Load times are really long, but again, review code, so I don't know if that's final.
That's probably, yeah.
I think it feels like, wow, this is how it was supposed to be. Oh, another thing that it just feels intuitive on the Vita is the implementation of the camera. Because before, you know, you could take pictures and make those into stickers.
Oh, right.
And all
I forgot
that
about that. They did that in the second one, yeah.
Yeah, you could use the PlayStation Eye. Having a camera on the back of the device you're playing with just makes sense. It just makes sense. So, you know, if I want to build something, I walk into my kitchen. I want to build my toaster in the game. I walk into my kitchen. I point my thing at my toaster. I take a picture of my toaster. And
see,
now
that's smart.
Lot of room for abuse here. Like, So is there anything that in the implemented to stop it from being incredibly sexual or incredibly operating?
I don't know. I'll tell you this. Probably TMI. Fair warning.
Okay.
Spoiler alert
ask.
For
Uh-oh.
TMI.
Uh-oh.
I was playing laying on my couch. I live by myself. I'll just leave it at that. So there's not always a lot of clothes involved in playing games. And part of the tutorial is like, hey, why don't you make something?
Hey,
and
kid, take a picture of your cat.
It goes, hey, why don't you make something? And then it just flips the camera on. And I'm sitting like laying there with it on my, you know, like resting on my chest. And I'm like, oh, that's
well, all right.
There we go. I'm not pressing R trigger right now.
You know what I'm saying?
Dude, the camera adds 10 pounds.
Yeah. It doesn't need to. But it was like, it was, you know, I was watching the Olympics and there's like, you know, so.
That's not an Olympic torch.
I'm just saying it was a picture of my TV and you know, it just flipped to that view and it's
5 meters
like,
springboard.
Okay. I really forgot what podcast I was on. I probably shouldn't have brought that up. Anyway.
Cool story, bro.
Thanks. But I'm saying it makes more sense that the thing that, you know, you have this camera in your hand, you can point it wherever you want and some places that you don't want.
Right.
So
I think that's
apologize to everyone in your family.
Technologically, that's really neat.
I think it's the way that kind of creation stuff should work. It it's so much better than this, like, camera that's sitting on your mantle or whatever your eye is, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, the TTP in a game is always worth noting. Oh, the time to penis.
Time to penis.
Yeah.
I just let that.
Anytime there's a game where it lets you be creative, it's always nice to see how fast a community can find ways to abuse that. So I appreciate it.
Excellent.
All right.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a fantastic time to broach the subject of the NPR discussion this week. You know where I'm going?
No. But I'm fascinated to find
out.
Oh,
no. Yeah, no, I opened that door.
You did open that door.
I didn't get to what I was playing.
Well, we still have another segment to go.
Man.
We still have another whole segment to go in which we will talk about sound shapes and Lost Odysseys and...
What have you been playing?
Coldstream.
Some DLC.
Oh, DLC.
She's been playing the Coldstreams.
Just the one.
Anyway.
Just one stream.
Earlier this year... There was the publicized event with Miranda Pacazdi. Is that the right way to say her name? So this was the woman who's pro gamer. She was playing in the Cross Assault fighting tournament, and her Tekken Tag coach was basically harassing her. Nothing. I mean, I guess we could say that. Is that accusatory? Anyway, he was being inconsiderate to her on the streams and harassing her. At one point, he, like, was like saying he was going to smell her. And
wait, what?
You don't remember all that controversy?
No.
And then she ultimately walked her character into the other to suicide her way out of the fighting match because it was just too much to deal with.
He said he was going to smell her? Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Classic. Stay classy, Tekken.
It was obviously very ugly, and there was like a bit, there was a lot of fallout. You don't remember this, there was a ton of discussion about it. No. And originally there was some indictment of the fighting community, and then she came back and said, hey, you know, look, really, this was one guy, my coach, being a bad guy. But it is part of a much bigger picture question, which is that in multiplayer gaming, obviously being a woman is a potentially difficult situation because of the lawlessness of the internet.
Because people are dicks.
So New York Times reporter Amy O'Leary was on NPR this week, and she talked about online harassment getting real for female gamers. And there have been a number of cases. And one thing that's really good about the growing discussion around this is it shows that, you know, now we have not only enough women gamers or people playing games who are women that we start to have these discussions that we're getting comfortable talking about it, and that's the first step towards getting this shit fixed, right? Because the first thing is we got to talk about it, and I want to make sure to early on point out fatuglyorslutty.com, which is a website that's been – so you laugh. This is really cool. It's a website that's been set up for women gamers to post the inappropriate comments that are put their way on the internet. And I got to tell you, the majority of them are Xbox Live messages that you would just be appalled by.
I don't doubt it. I don't understand the purpose of posting them. It seems like entertainment.
So the purpose of posting them is to start generating some positive peer pressure against people who behave in this way. Like publicizing that these people are acting like tools.
But at the same time, it could be like, you know how funny it was when like the text messages that you send autocorrect mishaps?
Yeah.
And that's how it got really popular. Then all of a sudden people started fabricating that, and then you would see fake messages. And so I feel like while this is let's publicly scorn these people for being awful, at the same time there could be some 14-year-olds who are like, let's try to get our message on there.
You think so?
It could.
So the idea is to
post
it.
Well, here I was thinking this was a good thing.
Well, post it and attach it to their gamer tag. So it's like, hey, this gamer tag is a dick. Is that the idea?
So the postings go up on the site, and they typically
screen caps,
and they typically white out or black out the person's who's posting it gamer tag, and just show the gamer tag of the person who sent it.
Right.
So it's basically like, hey, this person.
Makes sense.
I mean, if they're screen caps, as long as that system is in place and you have some sort of visual verification or whatever, I'm not sure how much good a site like that's going to do, but that's cool. Whatever.
I mean, if you are embarrassed,
you want to shame
it,
people.
Good.
That's fine. Like they deserve to be shamed. It's just I don't know how effective that is to, you know, like to this person is like a terror to deal with.
What you
want to
do?
Like, I don't want
to. What you want to do is the step two to this process.
Mm-hmm. IP address.
Address. Well, I was going to say is then start a advertising campaign in all the mommy blogs so that moms start reading this thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So when a mom sees their kid's gamer tag.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah, but how many moms know their kids' gamer tags?
Well, that
sadly
needs to change.
That's
moms need to know.
These are
that
the issues. Yeah.
Well, what came about of this, and these are important pieces, are that, first of all, in a voice chat environment, it is much more difficult than it was in instant message and chat board land to hide your gender. You know, it's just, Xbox tried voice masking. It didn't really work very well. It just was silly and stupid. So, you know, it tends to happen that you hear a voice, you can sort of read that it's a woman, and then once that happens, especially in highly competitive and aggressive games, they quickly become targets. And so I'm curious, like, Nicole, what has your experience been with this, and what do you think? What's your take on this subject?
Well, first off, I just avoid public matches as much as possible, and that's not always possible. So whenever I do play, I mean, I have a pretty high voice, I think, and so I often pretend I'm a 12-year-old boy. And I have a gender-neutral gamer tag, and I'll pretend I'm a kid. Because people say things
to you. How do
you
do that? How do you do it?
Well,
you'd be like, Mom, I'm going to play now.
Yeah,
okay, guys,
yeah.
I'm ready.
No, seriously, I'll ask something about dinner or like mention mac and cheese. Yeah, exactly. It's all you have to do. And people just assume you're a 12-year-old kid. Hmm. But you're playing Call of Duty because all the 12-year-old kids on there sound like 12-year-old kids. And unless you have a voice like mine, you probably can't pull it off. But I mean, some of the things I hear are, usually they're not mean in that they like tell me I suck or anything. It's usually two camps of weird sexual comments and like hitting on me, or it's like the super uncreative comments like about kitchens and sandwiches. And it's like, come on, it's 2012. Think of something else. Like, how do we make something else?
I like the hitting.
How do we make something else?
No, I'm better than a sandwich.
Yeah. Aim
bitch
higher.
Knit me a potholder.
Oh, at least it'd be creative.
God. Lobster thermidor stat.
Yeah, yeah.
Foie gras. Not California, that's illegal.
Not, yeah. I also like the idea of hitting on you. You're like, oh, dude, you are so amazing in Halo, and you've hit on me. Where can we meet?
I know.
Let's tell find me more a place. About you. Your avatar. Oh, man. Are you wearing a yellow polo in real life? Because, man, does that get me going.
Do you really look like Master Chief?
I love that helmet. The emblem you customized your gun with. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, exactly. How'd you settle on that one?
I just think it speaks to the general lack of civility.
It does.
And people.
I agree. So how do we conquer it? So some of the things that were suggested on the show, and Dave, so you won't panic. We'll just pick up some time out of the next segment because this is important. I don't want to interrupt it. And I thought this was interesting, and I hadn't heard this put forward before. What would you guys think about a implementation of a system in games where it looked at your history as regarded to voice chat and whether or not you had been muted by everyday players, and if you were over some threshold of like in X number of percentage games random people mute you, then you would begin matches muted in the first place so you couldn't harass people.
You mean what if reputation actually mattered? Because you can rate people and it doesn't really matter.
Reputation is nothing.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I call you a mutant.
I envision a wonderful world where all of these people are voted into the black hole of, you know, online matches where they're just with each other, just these people that like to shit talk each other, and that's where they are. And
the Max Payne cheater solution.
Yeah. Yeah. Put them in the cesspool.
And then on the opposite end, you could kind of do what they've talked about for Dota 2 in that you reward people for being the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
that. I like the idea of rewarding. I think that's
positive
productive.
Reinforcement rather than negative reinforcement generally.
And maybe put everyone who has 420 in their gamer tags in the same matches, because then they'd have something to talk about. Anytime by Call of Duty, there's always like XX420 baller.
All those kids who were born on April 20th are like, I shouldn't have put that in my... Oh.
Yeah. This is going to affect my life later, isn't it?
Silliness aside, what steps, punitive or positive?
I like the rating. Like being maybe not just muting, but maybe you have in the reputation field, you have the ability to say why you're giving them a poor reputation. Say that there was sexual harassment. Say that they were using racist remarks. Say that they were harassing you. Like an extra field of where you could, maybe it's not in the dashboard. Maybe you have to go through extra steps on Xbox.com. But why not have the ability to voice complaints? Because right now, all you can do is whine on the internet somewhere else.
What I worry about is one of the answers that I hear commonly put forward is, well, let the community police itself. And the community policing itself works in a persistent sort of environment. So, for instance, Chatty, fairly well on Shack News, is fairly well self-policing, but that's because comments are persistent. Someone does something or steps out of line, right, and there are ways to address that, and you can go back and see the history. It's not the same when you're in a spoken online, you know, voice chat situation where you come into a game where people are chatting and you don't know, there's no history. You don't see anything that people have said. You don't have any frame of reference for any of that. And so it all just is, it's a new experience every time someone starts speaking. So I think it's really hard to have this community policing thing. And there's all sorts of unfortunate ways that people could game any sort of reputation system. That's what worries me.
But there's no way for the community to police. Like, what can they? There's no moderators on Xbox Live. Just nothing. There's no action you can take at all.
And that's the problem. Is I think that the big companies are concerned about, well, once we get in there at all, then we're on the hook for moderating it. And if we get ourselves on the hook for moderating it, then we're responsible. And anytime someone gets, you know, verbally assaulted or has like a harassment plea,
can you imagine if somebody came out, a big player came out and actually did that successfully? They would. That would be so. People would just love. They would flock. I mean, that'd be a big
big feather in their cap, I think. And then they could probably sell that tech to whoever the hell else they wanted to. And
then if it's, I think it's a good tech idea. Based on like the vocabulary you're using, is it censorship? And then there's like that whole other argument.
Right. Well, I mean, that's why there's no just, you know, a lot of black and white rules you can make. But you can. I mean, there's ways to gather feedback and get, I mean, you know, you could even do something as draconian as like recording every public match and keeping that on a server for 30 days. And if somebody registers a complaint, you can go in, have somebody. But that's all manpower and infrastructure.
Well, so that's the reason I think that the big companies don't get into it, is they don't want to be committing themselves to that level of support for it. At the same time, it still is a serious problem. It clearly is an issue. I mean, Nicole, we sat here and chuckled a little bit, but I feel like it's really a freaking bummer that you have to pretend like you're a little child to play, because that's just
when you say it, yeah, when I hear it out loud, it's sad.
Doesn't it bug you?
Like, yeah, it absolutely.
Like, why should you
me,
have to do
but
that?
But I've never known anything different. I've never not had to be aware that I'm a girl when I'm playing games. And it's
messed up.
Yeah, well, you know, luckily I have, you know, I work in the industry, so I have a lot of friends who also play, and so I don't have to put myself out there. Because anytime you put yourself out there, you're gonna get feedback from people.
Yeah,
I mean, I just don't know. I don't know what else there is to do about it. I mean, the only times I get really negative stuff that makes me not want to play are first person shooters, and I'm pretty sure that at one point in Call of Duty, it might have been Modern Warfare 2, you couldn't, if you wanted to play certain public matches, you couldn't go into private chat, and those kind of situations will stop me from playing a game.
Okay, because then you can't. Because
then
just,
I have no options.
You can't group chat. You can't be right. You just. And I understand, because the reason they were doing the can't group chat was so that you couldn't game the ranking systems, and you know they're worried about their Elo system and making sure that they're matching people right. But at the same time, it's really messing up the community element of it.
But at the same time, like, everyone gets, you know, shit talked. Everyone is harassed in some sense. It's just that I'm harassed because I'm a girl, not because I'm a gamer. Like, I'm sure every one of you has had people yell at you and particularly hunt you down in the game and stab you and that kind of things. And I mean, it's a bigger issue of that's how we treat people when we game.
Yeah, it's not just a gender issue.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they would find another reason to yell at me.
And I think back to when I was a kid, and I and my friends, I'm sure you guys probably did too, we cranked called people. And we crank called people and said terrible, mostly stupid, juvenile things to them. But we did it because there were no repercussions, because you could do it anonymously. And then all of a sudden the phone company introduced the call you back thing.
Star 69.
Exactly. And then that sort of didn't really happen too much anymore. And I wonder, I know people are very tied to their anonymity online and feel the internet thrives for it, but I wonder if the solution isn't just, guess what, guys? Everybody out of the pool. You couldn't play nice. We all have to be real. It's tied to your Facebook account or something like that, where you have to be responsible for the things you put out in the world.
There has been a discussion about that, about making about removing the anonymity of online personas, so that you have to be that person.
Didn't that happen on, was it Battle.net?
Yeah. Yeah, the real ID thing. There was a lot of intense debate over that, and people felt like they were losing something precious. And I have sympathy to that argument, and I'm curious to see what our listeners think and talk back about this. I just feel like the civility you gain from people being accountable for the things that they say and write is worth the loss of your information not being public. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I've come to that as I've grown older, that I want to deal with human beings. I want to know who I'm dealing with, and I just don't have any patience for that bullshit anymore.
Right now, the best and really only proactive thing you can do is mute button, you know,
or just like what more often I think happens, exactly what you're saying, Nicole, is you just don't play public matches. And
right.
That's a shame. It's like, and I've said this before on the show, I think not recently, but a long time ago, is, you know, I love going to the basketball court, the blacktop at a park with my basketball and getting a pickup game with some guys that I've never met before. I love that.
Right.
And by the end of that game, yeah, you're competitive. Maybe you've even talked some shit, whatever. But everybody respects everybody. In rare occasions, things flare up. But because you're real human beings in a real situation,
you have this awesome thing. You even potentially make friends, what have you. The idea of that happening on a global scale online is incredibly exciting and should be the thing. It should be the thing that the internet allows you to do. And in a lot of cases, that happens. World of Warcraft guilds like meet IRL, you know, at these big conventions. And people have had relationships that have never met before. And those things are possible and can happen. And it just – it requires people not being fucking assholes all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And I think – And of course, it's a problem of youth, and it's a problem of lack of perspective of youth. And I was guilty of it as well, as I said, with those kinds of behaviors. But
yeah, I got a call here for Mr. Freely, Mr. IP Freely.
Nice.
So,
all right, so there you go, folks. There's your point of discussion to hop into the
lecture from the old people.
I'm really curious to see what sort of ideas Shackers in the community out there listening have. For this, we'll open it. We'll run this discussion as long as you guys want to talk about it.
Well, so I'm curious as to if anyone who's listening has been mean to someone online. Like, have you ever felt bad after it, or did
ooh.
What goes through your mind? Is it anger, or is it
yes.
Yeah? Like, I'm curious because I'm sure it's different for everyone. But if I was mean to someone, I think I'd just feel awful.
See, my behavior, and granted, I don't play a lot of public matches either. But if somebody starts giving me shit, I actually find it incredibly amusing, and I try to fuck with that person as much as possible. Like, try to find what's going to press their button, and just because it doesn't bother
me. Perpetuate the problem, Mattis.
No. But I mean, like, this kid or whatever is like talking a big pile of shit, and sometimes I'll hear him talking a pile of shit on somebody else, and I'll make it a point to like, and not just do what he's doing, but try to be clever about it and try to be funny and try to make him feel like an idiot, which he is.
Yeah, because maybe if they know what it feels like, they won't do it. Like, I mean,
yeah,
maybe.
I mean, I like the
we'll see.
In theory, that makes sense.
Well, I mean, that approach is more of a, I'm not going to teach this kid anything, so, you know.
Might as well make him cry.
Yeah.
You go, folks. Let's see what you have to say, and we will come right back and wrap this sucker up. Right, it was definitely funky from Dave there. All right, so Nicole, since you are our guest, what have you been playing?
So we've kind of been in a summer rut for lack of games. So I've been playing some DLC for games that I've had for a while, and then for even longer. I've been playing Left 4 Dead DLC Coldstream, which finally released for the 360, and I've been playing Dawnguard, the DLC for Skyrim.
Nice.
So for those who haven't played it, because I thought that it's really slid by the radar, what's Coldstream all about?
So Coldstream is one new map created by the community, and then four maps that were included in Left 4 Dead 1. No Mercy was included in The Sacrifice, so you already have that one. I think it's like Dead Air, Death Toll, and two others. And so you get these maps, and so the new map, Coldstream, is kind of like a forest level. Obviously takes place in a creek. Not really a stream. Weirdly named.
Creek,
actually,
stream, whatever.
Not really cold level either. It's actually a lovely day. If you ignore the zombies, it's quite lovely. I would say April, maybe. Maybe April 25th. Perfect day. So it's, you know, it's technically...
Someone's adding that to the wiki.
Yeah, right, I know.
Coldstream takes place on April 25th, according to Nicole Z.
That's how it starts.
So because it's a community created level, it's not considered canon, which, I mean, I don't really know how much that matters for Left 4 Dead, but it's... not canon, so they were never actually in the forest. It's a pretty short level. There are minor design flaws. There's only really one area where
I died.
What do
you mean minor design flaws?
Well, there's the whole level is basically goes in and out, in and around a stream. And so there's bodies of water in the game. And so there's one point in the game, the final chapter, where there's this body of water right in front of you. And if you walk, if you fall off the side, which is a few feet, which you would never die in the game from, you die instantly. But because you're in the forest, there are no closets for you to revive from. So if you like venture into this one body of water, then you're dead for like the entire match. It's a bummer. You eventually can get revived.
That stream is cold, yo.
Yeah. Maybe it is appropriately named. On the PC, it's been out since March, I think 22nd. It's free on the PC. You get a whole achievement on the PC. 360, it just came out last Friday. It's 560 MS points.
What a weird number.
560?
Yeah.
Well, because I'm sure it somehow, you know, relates to actual $7. But you know how MS points, like, converts doesn't make sense?
Oh,
like,
I know. Like,
oh, no, we all know. I like it. If you're a Left 4 Dead fan, you should probably play it because it's just another reason to play Left 4 Dead some more. $7 ain't too bad. But Skyrim DLC it's my jam. Isn't it? I mean, has no one else played it?
I haven't, but like I said,
Can I spoil it? I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to...
You can spoil it.
There's vampires.
Okay, so that's it's a big spoiler.
Well, Nicole's on Team Werewolf.
I'm Team Werewolf.
Sort of. I mean, she's trying to hook up with a vamp as well.
It's complicated.
But, yeah.
It's pretty complicated.
I hear it's a bad idea to let them impregnate you, though, because your baby, like, grows at an accelerated rate.
Right.
And then it has imprinted on the...
And then, like, they fall in love with the werewolf that you used to date.
Not
it's
good.
Really weird.
Not good.
Yeah.
For anyone.
Yeah. Should make a movie out of that.
It'll be terrible.
Should probably be six parts. I actually don't know how many parts it is. If you haven't played it already, Dawnguard is about the Dawnguard, which is this group of, like, I wouldn't say they're soldiers, but they're, like, warriors who...
Protect Don Knotts.
They protect Don Knotts.
Don't you get next to Mr. Furley!
Oh, jeez.
No, don't take Mr. Limpet!
Yeah, I don't really get these references.
See, she wins.
I really do, but
she
I just want to feel bad.
Don Knotts has been gone for a while, though, so that's fair.
So they are protecting Skyrim from vampires. So the entire kind of story arc of the download is around this kind of vampire cult that wants to use Ariel's bow, which the snow elves have, which, yay, snow elves.
Nice.
Am I right?
Snow elves.
No one?
No, it's cool. Yeah. They got pointy ears. They live in the snow. I get it.
Cool. Yeah, okay.
It is a little bit of a random association of climate and forest creature or fantasy creature.
I'm sure they
it's a,
dig,
it's a little random.
Snow.
It's kind of like swamp orc.
Actually,
I would love.
Well,
to
there are wood elves. I mean, there's wood elves, high elves, dark elves. And
I've never
elves.
Fucking heard
snow
of
elves.
Snow elves.
Well, but
you didn't hear about the first snow elf.
You didn't hear. it's a little early.
The
for
angel
those
did sing.
Buddy the elf. Yes, Buddy the elf was definitely the.
But
snow
there's a reason
elf.
You haven't heard about the snow elves.
Of
allow
course
me to
there
elaborate.
Is.
They've been buried in snow.
Because so when the Nords took Skyrim for their own, the snow elves were pushed out, and because they wanted to survive, they made a deal with the Dwemer. Am I saying that right? The dwarves.
Sure.
And the Dwemer backstabbed them, made them be blind, and
classic
turned them
Dwemer.
Into the Falmer. So all those Falmers that are kicking your asses in Blackreach and stuff used to be snow elves.
Former snow elves.
Yeah.
Thawed snow elves.
Well, I mean, no, just mutated over generations.
Oh, yeah. Well,
but
sure.
So this one snow elf dude has the bow that the bow is used to black out the sun so then vampires can live forever. And then you meet this girl who's potentially my new girlfriend, even though...
Can I just say one thing real,
yeah.
real quick? I
Go ahead.
Really want you to continue and I don't want to interrupt
okay.
you.
But I'm going to anyway.
I'm
going to
give you a $1 million idea, and I want you to run with it.
Here, I'm writing my pen and paper.
Got it. You're going to do a podcast.
Podcast.
Where you describe the plots of video games.
Am I not doing the best job?
No, it's awesome.
Okay.
I think you would have a million
it's
listeners.
It's totally accurate, though.
It is wonderful. You totally have it, and I'm enthralled. I
okay,
love it.
Okay, so more snow
it's
elves.
Adorable when you do it, and you're like... And they blot out the sun, and I'm like, it's like a bedtime story. It's like video game bedtime stories with Nicole.
Oh, blot out the sun.
I love it.
Aww.
Okay, go ahead.
So the snow elf has Ariel's bow, but oh man, where do I even go with this? So the vampire cult wants to blot out the sun. The leader of the cult's daughter is hidden away with an elder scroll.
What?
Yeah, there's multiple. And so but I'm not going to ruin, that doesn't really ruin anything because you found all that out in the first 5 minutes. And so the plot
it's
is
a very busy first 5
minutes. It's really busy.
So you told it to us in real time.
Yeah, no cutscenes.
Just without the accents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't do Nordish. Cool. Accents.
It's very ooty booty.
Yeah. So you get this vampire companion, and you can either join the vampire cause or stick with the Dawn Guard. And because I am married to a companion, and I felt bad becoming a vampire, so I stuck with werewolf. But throughout the DLC, you go to this place called the Soul Cairn, which is where souls go when you put them in soul gems.
What?
Yeah.
So it's like a whole land of souls, like all hanging out, going, I hope I'm here just to upgrade your weapon.
And then once you run out, where do you go? Soul Cairn.
Wow.
Yeah. And when you're there, there's like a mini quest, and you can get like Ghost Horse.
Ghost Horse sounds like DLC to me.
And you can summon it. You summon it like a spell, like it's a conjuration.
That's rad.
Yeah. And then so in the end, whichever side you choose, you can have the vampire be your companion forever. And because she's a vampire, she can't die.
So
and she's also kind of hot.
It's really forever.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah.
I
really enjoyed it. A lot of people thought that the DLC was lacking because I think they wanted them to expand more on maybe outside of Skyrim, more of Tamriel, and maybe more explanation of races.
I think that's not a good representation. There were a number of people who enjoyed it for it being a much more storytelling experience, which your story of the story relates very well, that it was a very, like,
it answers questions.
Try and do the same thing for Skyrim.
Well, you can do this. You can do the thing for each, like,
yeah,
major
explain
quest
Skyrim.
Line.
Well, hold on. This will be an awesome testbed. Explain Skyrim to me.
Okay, so you this are the dragon. Well, I'm going to do a really small version. So you're the dragonborn. You have to discover you're the dragonborn through the Greybeards. Now, at this time, the land of Skyrim is going through a civil war, and you can side with the Imperials or the Stormcloaks. And so while Skyrim is going through a civil war, it's being terrorized by dragons. And so you have to discover the power within to defeat the dragons and save Skyrim from the dragons and save Skyrim from itself. Wow. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
It got real at the end.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Which I did.
And
I did
is,
all that.
That is the gift.
Yeah. And the guy who voices Parthenox is Mario.
This has been Skyrim Storytime.
Wow. Wait, what? Was that last
Yeah. Bit? The guy who voices Mario voices Parthenox, like the dragon who's like the leader of the Elder Scrolls. I just ruined all of Skyrim for everybody, but it's not since November, so.
Wait, does he do multiple voices?
He does like tons of voices.
But it's him. Oh,
yeah.
The dragon's all, it's a dragon!
So you got in that part.
Easy joke.
So yeah, there's the Dawn Guard. I really enjoyed it, but I would have liked them to let me play. I would have liked them to add a playable race and let me re-roll as a snow elf because I'm in love with them.
That'd been cool.
Yeah.
That was my takeaway. Snow elves are rad.
They're so rad.
I'm kind of having this weird thought. This is probably not the right time to bring this up, so maybe we'll just carry this over to another discussion. What's the secret, do you think?
Positive attitude.
To getting... It's not a bad secret.
Amazing.
Not a bad secret.
Wonderful.
Not a bad secret. But another secret for...
I agree, by the way.
How you keep gamers interested enough to come back to your game and participate in your post-launch content. Because...
Makes a great game.
Yeah. Portal 2 was a great game.
And I think a lot of people played the post-launch content, no?
I didn't go back for it.
And I feel like a lot of my gamer friends haven't. And now, you know, now the great creation suite has come out for it. And I don't feel like the same... And granted, I'm sure there is a core community around which there's a lot of attention, a lot of buzz, people probably using it. But I don't feel like it's nearly as big as what the community was at, like, Portal 2. It's like, fuck yeah, Portal 2, amazing. Everybody talking about it. Everybody's super engaged by it all the time. And yet, I don't feel like any of that has happened. And I really kind of thought, wow, when that creator comes out, people are going to be super back into that. It really didn't happen.
We gamers have short attention spans. And I think that Portal was such a perfect single-player narrative that gamers probably didn't feel the need to be a part of it. But for DLC, like, the reason I come back to a game is because they left me wanting more. Mm-hmm. And they did in Skyrim. I wanted more. But, like, Mass Effect 3, they left me, like, in such a pissy mood that I didn't want to go back.
Yeah. I mean, that Mass Effect 3 is another great example. who of us has downloaded the patch and watched the extra ending content?
Nah. Every single one.
Downloaded the patch. I am waiting. See, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. I'm waiting until all the DLC comes out before I replay it. And then I'm going to replay it all again.
It's a good idea, because in the Leviathan patch, or DLC pack, there's supposed to be...
Allegedly,
extra dialogue with this Star Kid. Ask what the Reapers were, and he's like, you wouldn't know. And I'm like, I know I wouldn't, so I'm asking you. Now, when you get the DLC, he'll be like, oh, wait, I remembered.
Oh. Well, see,
that's what he'll say.
That's convenient. No, but
it's all coming back to me now.
You paid $7 to play this? I know now.
It'd be even better if the dialogue paused and there's a little loading bar and he comes back.
Counting
with the
how
answer.
Much MS points you have left.
There's a second currency that comes up for 5 gems.
Yeah. No, so, don't get me wrong. I'm not buying any of the weapons packs or any of that, but the story based content. And I did that for 2 as well. I bought all of them and then didn't play them until they were all out and replayed the whole thing.
I'm just curious. I mean, DLC is a funny thing, and then especially user generated content stuff. We talked about Little Big Planet. Here we talked about Portal 2 a little bit. I'm thinking about Sound Shapes, which is definitely huge on the creation side because the campaign piece is actually fairly short.
Mm-hmm.
And you can play back through them because there's the time competition piece to it. I'm just wondering what we've learned from all the games we've played that have been really active in building post-launch support that we can look for in designs to be like, oh, yeah, that's really going to work. That's going to keep me engaged. Or, oh, that's really not going
to
work.
I think in regard to Portal specifically, a lot more people like to solve puzzles than create puzzles.
Yes.
And I think that's part of – yes. And yes, if you're going to ship a content creator at some point, if you can at all, if it's at all possible, get it as close to launch of the regular game as you can, because
Definitely. That's
when you're in critical mass. And regardless of how good the game is,
probably would have made a huge difference for them to have had that creation suite available at launch.
Right. Oh, yeah. There'd already be tons and tons and tons of levels. There probably would have been people that didn't even finish the campaign before they started designing stuff.
People would know about it if it was on the disc. I feel there's a good portion of gamers who aren't following the blogs, who aren't, up on Valve's Twitter. Valve doesn't have a Twitter. But, if it was on the disc, people would have tried it out and then done the tutorial and learned.
Right, right. And now it's sort of that game that I played a while back that was, linear first, person thing that I did that was awesome. Yeah. And honestly, talking about it now, I'm like, I wouldn't mind going back and replaying Portal 2, but it's not going to be Ballad of Gay Tony or Lost in the Damned or some sort of completely new game that's using the core engine, really. Yeah. It's just
see, I'm starting to develop this theory that, or this thought in my head that more than anything, really strong content that of a narrative nature that extends the character development of characters you've grown to love and really be involved in makes the most sense and has the best chance for success. Whether it was even in the case of something like Zombie Red Dead Redemption,
right,
people came back for that, but that was because you really bought into John Marston and you really were into the Red Dead, the Red Dead world, and
really,
really
wanted
by
a flaming horse.
Yeah, it was cool to go play around with. But you know what I'm saying is that, and
I bet you the data would show you the exact opposite.
You think so?
I think that, it's kind of unfair a comparison, but I think you would see that the biggest selling DLC are Call of Duty map packs, Halo map packs.
Well, okay, I'm talking.
You know what I'm saying? So that you have
outside of that world. Obviously, I'm talking about a different model than that.
Right.
Call of Duty map packs.
That's why I said
it
was kind of
an
unfair comparison. But if you have a persistent game that catches on, feeding that is probably your most successful.
Oh, for sure.
But if you're talking about a narrative experience, then
for sure. I wish though that we could get to a point where we could figure out how to crack that nut and keep, and maybe it is just having the creator available at the time of launch. We'll see with Sound Shapes. I'm really curious to see what happens with Sound Shapes because the Vita is such a tough platform to support, but it's also available on PS3. So that's awesome. It has cloud sync so that whatever you do on one device is carried over to the other device. I thought that this is another game that I had played in demo form, but had sort of kept myself walled back from enough that I could enjoy it. I thought that the game was going to be a little more music creation centric, but it's more platforming game creation.
Yeah, the music is a byproduct of the platforming, almost.
I don't know that I'd say a byproduct. Have you created some levels in it?
Just barely. I mean, in the same way that I create.
I made a box and a blue box. Yeah.
I put a thing here, and then I jumped on that thing, and I put another thing over there.
And it made noises.
I'm working on my first level. And I'm doing it on Vita, because much like you found in Little Big Planet, I found that the creation suite with the touch controls is definitely where it's at.
It just makes sense.
It makes, exactly. You've gotten accustomed to it, especially if you have a modern mobile device.
Yeah.
You're using touchscreens a lot. So that makes all sense. And it's really cool, because the other thing that's nice about the touchscreen version is that you can hear the music by tapping the screen on the grid where you want to play something, and it'll play that note, so you'll get an idea. So the concept of the game is it's a platformer in 2D space where your roly-poly, which is sticky, as it moves through the environment, can hit notes, and the notes are the beat forms from the music that that the level designer has composed. So if you think of it as sort of a sheet of music, and each of the notes on the staff are things that then the character that your little roly-poly goes and hits, and as it hits, it opens up that loop. The thing, though, that, like, it's the what I was hoping for more of was that I could be really creating music that was transforming into levels, but it's more like I'm creating levels with music pieces put into it.
Right.
And there's a series of frames, and each frame is a screen in which your level takes place, and music only travels 3 frames. So... It's a little limiting in that regard, but you can do some really cool looking platforming development. I'm just thinking that ultimately it might wind up being a little too narrow.
Limited. No, I'm not super familiar with this game. Is the point of the game to create levels, or is that just one of the features?
Well, it has a really cool set of campaigns with Guthrie music from Sword Sorcery Guy, Deadmau5 music, and some other really, really cool music that's in it. But the campaigns are only like 5 levels each.
And they're platforming.
And they're pure platforming, yeah. And they're really cool platforming. There's some really cool like jumping and maneuvering, and it responds well. I love that it has a zero death penalty theory to it. You die, you just go back to the last checkpoint, and there's lots of checkpoints, because it's more about like getting through the level and putting the music pieces together. Jury's out for me a little bit, though. A little bit. I'm not quite as enthusiastic. I like it. I definitely like it. I think it's really creative and artistic, and I applaud that part of it. I'm just not sure that I'm enjoying it quite as much as I want to do, but I'm going to soldier through making at least this first level and see what I can do with that. And I'll report on that next week.
Cool.
Groovy.
All right, let's do those finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
Jeff Cannata, last one in, first one out.
Yeah. So I'm started doing this show up in San Francisco with Molly Wood called Always On, and was up in San Francisco this week, and I just wanted to share with the audience because it was really exciting. I leapt out of a helicopter.
Congratulations.
At 10,000 feet.
Nice. I saw a couple of pics, actually.
I really didn't. I haven't played too many video games other than that I got to bring my Vita with me. That's why I was playing a Little Big Planet.
You played in the air?
No, but I did take a photo on my iPhone as I fell, uploaded it to Instagram all before I hit the ground.
What filter did you use?
Landed gently on the ground.
What filter did you use?
I did the filter that's called
So but,
you can check that on September.
Buddy jump?
It was a tandem, yeah.
That's cool.
But my tandem partner had done 5,500 jumps.
Whoa.
First one ever out of a helicopter.
Oh,
they
wow.
say it is exceedingly rare to jump out of a helicopter.
So why did you guys jump out of a helicopter?
Because it's cooler.
Okay.
I literally, like a action star, stood on the strut at 10,000
awesome.
Feet as we hovered in the air.
Wow.
And then we leapt off. It was badass. So you guys get to see tons of video. There's like a million GoPros.
I'm super jealous.
Now, is that your first skydiving experience?
No, I skydived in college once.
Okay.
And but that was out of a plane, and it was a long time ago, and I was young, and I needed the money.
It was in the past. you know.
I'm super jealous. Molly Wood is also one of the coolest people in the
She's
world.
So great.
And so
yeah, it's a fun,
that's awesome.
Fun
Congratulations.
So check out Always On CNET. I have been on an episode. I will be on lots more, hopefully, next season.
Awesome.
Cool.
And from one Jeff to another.
Yes. So my finishing move is I got to see a cool game. Developers came by the office today to show off a game called Forge. It's actually a third-person competitive multiplayer game that's very much paced like a shooter. So it's very fast-paced and stuff. But it's all class-based and it's all fantasy-based. So
you know, you're throwing out spells and all sorts of crazy stuff, and pretty big maps. It's Unreal Engine 3. Anyway, they are pretty close to finishing the project, but they just launched a Kickstarter for completion funds. Got a bunch of videos up. I actually got to play some pre-alpha stuff. Pretty fun. Pretty cool concept. You know, it's not really mainly to pimp out the Kickstarter, but it's definitely a, if you're looking for a cool class-based multiplayer thing that's a little bit different than most of the, you know, run-and-gun stuff that's out there right now, it's probably worth a look. I'll have a preview on Shack News probably late Friday, early Monday.
Awesome. Nicole.
Well, today in EverQuest 2, there is a new feature release called SO Emote.
Which does not have anything to do, by the way, with an emo service for online games.
No, it's not an emo MMO. There's no Black Islander buffs in the game that I'm aware of.
I was sorely disappointed.
But it is tech that, using your webcam and your microphone, it reads your facial expressions, and your character, your tune, will immediately have those exact same facial expressions. And it's something that was shown off at E3, and it, for some reason, didn't register on my radar. I was focused on other things, I guess. But it's really cool tech. And with a microphone, you can like manipulate your voice so your character sounds as tough as you want it to, or is not tough, you know, whatever you're into. But I think it's implementation of tech that we're seeing, obviously on a bigger scale, in games like L.A. Noire and whatever else is using those, like Far Cry 3. And it's using your webcam to have facial recognition technology, so you're becoming the hero. And it's being implemented for the first time on a mass scale in a free-to-play MMO that's been around for like 8 years. And I think that's super impressive. And so it's free-to-play, and you can make your face move in a game.
That's super cool. I just don't know how many different facial expressions I have playing an MMO.
Well, I think it probably is more useful. They added a group chat UI, like or the box, I guess, that where you can see everyone in your guild's like facial reaction. So if you're discussing a raid or if you're discussing what you should do next, you can actually see them have emotions. And I mean, I guess it only works if you're a good actor and you're not just like sitting at your desk like eating Cheetos.
More face acting.
Yeah, it's like,
but it's just that the technology's out there and it's usable. And I think this is a step that we're going to see. Like, if you can do it through webcam, why can't you do it with your Kinect?
All of the characters in my guild have Cheeto face at the same time. It's Cheeto face expression.
That's a great expression.
That's a great expression. Hey, Final Fantasy XIV is going to relaunch, but that's not the fantasy I'm going to talk about. No, I'm going to talk about fantasy football.
Hey-o, it's almost time. It's almost time.
Bum, 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 bum.
Are you ready for some football?
Are you ready? Are you ready? Because the tailgate will be returning, but...
Yes!
Yes, the tailgate will be returning. And in addition, the weekend confirmed fantasy football leagues.
Full effect.
Which,
plural.
Which apparently is going to be two. So Jeff and I will be in them. And then we'll have to figure out, we're going to have to divvy things out. I don't think we can do more than two leagues.
I certainly won't be able to.
Yeah, I don't think we can do more than two leagues. So, because I have another couple of leagues in addition to that. But there will be bragging rights.
Or embarrassment, right?
So I hope you guys are getting excited. I think we're going to do it on NFL.com because that seemed to be the consensus amongst the responders. And
yeah. Full disclosure, I drafted Peyton Manning last year. Oh. So that was a smart move.
You know, you might be able to get him for cheap this year.
I signed him last year.
No. Signed him?
Yeah. We did a random draft where everyone got random people to start out.
Now, that's kind of weird.
And I got him. Yeah.
I've never done that before.
Yeah.
That's kind
of weird. I'm excited, though. I'm excited.
I know. I am yeah. Well, you have a lot to be. You have a lot to be excited about with your San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, baby.
Was
Randy
that
Moss.
Your Brooklyn accent?
Hmm?
49ers.
49 with your San Francisco 49ers. Yeah, that's the old dude on the sports radio.
That's voice. Garnett doing Chris Berman doing some guy. That's what that was.
Yeah. Rumbling, stumbling, bumbling. He could
the
go
Raiders.
All the way. I don't know, but there's lots of negative talk in fantasy land around Frank Gore. Maybe too old. Maybe too old. Maybe too old. There's a lot of weird conversations. Anyway, if you are excited about fantasy football, we are going to have an entire smorgasbord of fantasy football around the Weekend Confirmed show because we love it.
We do.
There you go. Get excited about it. If you would like to catch up with Nicole Z, you can do that on Twitter, where her handle is Nicole Z, which will be in the show notes, or at g4tv.com, where she is on the feedbacks. Anything else?
I don't know. I'm a writer on the feed. I write every single day. So if you want news.
And if you're ever playing a video game with a 12-year-old boy, it just might be Nicole
Z. It just
Z.
might be me.
So there you go. Next time you hear someone, Mom, make me a sandwich. Nicole, is that you? You want to go out with me?
Yeah. Definitely try that. Try that immediately.
Try it.
Let me know how that
works. Ask the 12-year-old boy out on a date every time you're in a game with one. That will never result in a bad thing.
Yeah, never.
Just my workout.
Hanson shows up.
Oh, dear. And of course, now we know where to find Jeff on...
Yeah, if you were following me at Jeff Cannata with 2N1T, you would have seen the photo that I uploaded as I plummeted toward the earth. A photo I uploaded without knowing whether I would survive or not.
You had a pretty good idea.
All that drama and more in my Twitter feed. Follow it immediately, if not sooner.
Jeff Mattis, of course, Indie Games Channel and on ShaqNews.com. And there you go, folks. Hope your preseason football energy is building. I hope if you are final, I almost did it. It happens to me every year. Final Fantasy Football. Someone needs to make it.
Make that.
Need to
final
make
fantasy
that
football.
Game.
Ooh, I don't know, man. Everybody, you'd have a lot of injuries.
Status effect.
Summoning.
Summoning. Anyway. Summoning a bear. Chicago always summons a bear.
There's your weekend confirmed, folks. Until next week, we are Ghost.
Damn, what time is it?
I need a drink, Hangaway.
I need a drink, Alize.
I need a drink,
Hangaway.
I need a drink,
Champagne.
I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help.
I need a drink, Absolute.
I need a drink, Hypnotic.
I need a drink,
NSC.
I need a drink,
Gin and Tonic. I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help.
It's only 12 o'clock, but I need another bottle, cause me and my crew only know four.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.